Steve, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. So happy that you're here to join us for the Tuesday show. If you want to contribute, if you want to jump in, a question, a comment, 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy.
I'm so happy to be here, Bill.
Isn't it a nice day to be here?
I'm telling you, just when the sun's out, it changes everything. It's a little cold.
It is too cold, but that'll be remedied. It's going to be up near 60 shortly, in a day or two.
The groundhog lied to us.
Yeah, they're not the groundhogs are not to be trusted. You can't trust a groundhog.
Listen to what you're saying.
What's the first thing I tell you every day when you walk in? You
don't
say, hi, Bill,
groundhog.
And I say, do not trust the groundhog. And I mean it, too. Last night, by the way, I just want to say very quickly, I watched mostly the Cubs game because it was their home opener, but I did switch
that?
Around a little bit. The feeling is totally different.
Electric.
It really is. I'm so used to, usually by the home opener, the Cubs have already been eliminated for the season. If they open on the road, usually we come home and it's like, wait till next year. It's not going to be our year this year. But this year, after what happened last season, getting so deep into the playoffs and then getting off to such a great start, even when they were down 3-0 late in the game in the seventh inning, you're like, well, I don't think 3 runs is that big of a deal. And it wasn't.
Way better than us. Way better than the Sox opening game. Boy, that was a debacle.
But that's the only bad game the White Sox have had all week.
Yeah, but that's
They're
a bad one to
too.
Be a bad game.
Yeah, you want a good showing at your home opener because it's a full house.
And it gets the momentum going, and it really wasn't a full house.
But I know, it wasn't as full as it should be. There was a lot of people there, but it wasn't as totally
so
full.
So it was Bernie Sanders full, but not Donald Trump
right.
full?
Right. Right.
Yes.
That's it exactly. But if you look at this, if you look at the standings, if the season ended today, two things would happen. Both the Cubs and the White Sox would be in the playoffs. And a lot of people would say, why did the season end a week after it started? The season usually goes 6 months. What's up with that?
Teams would have paid a lot of money for those players right. for those 6 games.
Right. They're way overpaid for a 1 week season. What's wrong with Major League Baseball ending the season after a week?
Well, I didn't watch a look at the Cubs game, but I saw the results all over Facebook, and congratulations to the Cubs fans. How about that? I'm getting better.
Yes, you are. I commend you. But both the Cubs and the White Sox are going to have a fine season. It's exciting. Steve?
I was talking to someone. I don't know if you were worried about the no-hitter there for a while or...
Yeah, the Cubs went into the sixth, I think without getting any hits.
Yeah,
fifth or sixth.
And even Klein, they got what looked like might have been a double, but they gave the guy an error on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Because he kind of whipped
yeah.
at it, but...
Who got the big home run?
Addison Russell.
That is such a baseball name, isn't it? And perfect for the clubs, I almost said. The Cubs.
Yep.
Because of Addison being
yep.
there.
Yep. And it was very nice to see Kyle Schwarber came out at the beginning of the game, and
yep.
he is hobbled, you know, because
he's
of his accident.
He's out the whole year, huh?
He's going to miss the whole season. But I thought, how great would it have been for him, for Kyle Schwarber to come on out on the crutches and then just have Jake Arrieta just lightly touch him on the forehead and have him just throw the crutches away and run. Wouldn't that have been amazing?
No.
Then you would say, anything can happen this year to the Cubs.
And I guess Anthony Rizzo came to the plate to Starlin Castro's old batting song.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I read that today, yeah. So that's kind of a nice touch.
Yeah, yeah. But they seem to be having fun. I mean, they've got the best manager in all of baseball.
He just touches his head and say, hit.
Right.
You shall hit.
Right. And then he just hits a ball that goes out of the ballpark, circles the earth, and comes back and goes for another home run.
And that's stops on top of the scoreboard.
Yeah.
Does it make cartoon sound effects as it's circling the earth?
Like that.
Who needs Michael Winslow?
That's what I want to see. That's a miracle baseball team right there.
I watched something a little more
intelligent.
Stupid.
Oh, what?
No. I got to tell you, I know you're not a big fan of Kevin Hart.
I
could
not
take
like
him
Kevin
or leave
Hart.
Him.
Yeah.
I mean, he was funny on SNL. I mean, he's very energetic.
Yeah.
But he and Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, were hosting, was it the MTV Awards
the
last
MTV
night?
The MTV Movie Awards,
yes.
right? Yeah.
And that was the biggest debacle I have ever seen in my life.
No, wait. It was on Sunday.
Okay, well, we were watching
it
last night.
Oh, you watched it a night later? Okay.
We're never on time. Really, this DVR thing has really made my life easier.
I know.
And all their little monologue between, you've got The Rock dressed as Superman, and I think he had something stuffed in his pants.
Oh.
And then you had Kevin
really
Hart,
Superman.
Who was a tiny Batman.
All right, that's funny. I'll admit it. I think that's funny.
All they said was the B word.
Oh. Yeah.
Come on.
Batman. What about Superman?
Right.
Where are all the B words? Come on. Let's check out the B words. And it's like, is this funny? If you say the word bitch one more time, I'm going to throw up.
Did the crowd enjoy this?
Sort of, kind of, not really.
It's a tough room. That MTV room is a very hard room. It really is, because everyone at MTV...
You're sticking up for Kevin Hart.
I'm not sticking up for him, but I've seen guys, I've seen really funny guys do the MTV Music Awards and the Movie Awards, and the MTV crowd is like, we're too cool for this all the time. I'd rather do the Nickelodeon Awards.
That would be fun.
That would be a lot of fun.
Because they'll laugh at anything.
I know. You just put goop on somebody and they laugh.
Yeah, that would be an easy gig. You're right. This is tough. This isn't like Academy Awards or anything tough.
But they really try to outcool each other at the MTV Awards, movie and music. So I'm not sticking. Believe me, the last thing I would ever do is stick up for Kevin Hart.
It was just disgusting. I am not a prude. I am far from it. But it was really, it wasn't funny. And it's like, where are all the Marvel bitches?
Oh, really?
My God, that's hysterical.
And was that the opening monologue or was that somewhere in the middle?
I don't know. It was on DVR. Oh, so I just know it was on and I was making dinner and I went back to the grill to grill my chicken. I'm like, why are you watching this? I don't even know who was watching it.
Did you feel too old to be watching it?
A little bit.
Because the last three things I've watched on MTV, two of them award shows, I just feel like, oh, I am so old just watching this.
Yeah, I feel, you know what, oddly enough, I don't feel old when I watch the Nick Awards.
Right.
I really don't.
They're more welcoming.
Yeah,
they
this
are.
Was really bothersome.
Yeah.
So I should have watched the Cubs.
Right.
But I didn't, and I won't.
Do you have 153 more chances?
Mm.
You're not going to do it?
No, but I can't believe you're sticking up for Kevin Hart. Mark this day on the calendar.
I'm not.
A little bit.
I swear to you, I'm not. It's the last thing you'll ever hear me do. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a big show for you. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Again, not a Cubs fan, but I was telling Bill off the air to see a lot of friends of mine who were at the opening game last night. Was this the first night opener they've had?
I'm Jill Egan.
Jill Egan. She will be the first to tell you that they have played night openers in the past. She, by the way, I'll be having a discussion with somebody about something like that, and she'll pop in with the facts, and I always applaud her for that. I don't know how she does it.
Timing.
It's got to be timing.
I don't have it.
It's got to be timing. Right.
But just to see the exuberance of all my Facebook friends that really they were just so excited, and coming from the White Sox opener, which just sucked a duck.
But that, I'm telling you, that is the only bad game. I know they've only been playing a week, but that's been their only bad outing so far. They're in first place. I mean, it's a week, but they look like they're a much better team, a much improved team. It should be a good summer.
If Drake LaRoche was there for opening day,
right,
things would have gone better.
You're right.
And 8-3-2, I don't appreciate this, and you can use this joke interchangeably. What has 40 legs, 40 arms, and 3 teeth?
What has 40 legs, 40 arms, and 3 teeth?
Any row at a Sox game. Not funny. I've heard it in, you know, front row of a Willie Nelson show.
Then it's funny.
Yeah.
It's much funnier that way. Kevin and I were having a discussion before you came in today, and I want to see if you know the answer to this. This was just a discussion, never an argument. Listen to this. Kevin tells me the story. You know, he's big into guitars, right? So he tells me about his prized possession, this guitar that he got, and the way
bass
he received
guitar.
It. It's a bass guitar, yeah.
Difference.
The way, well, yeah, it's still in the guitar family,
right?
All right. The way he received it is a little strange. They sent it to him by accident. This guitar company, can I say this on the air, Kevin, or is this probably
you just did.
All right.
Is this your custom-made baby?
No, this is a guitar I got years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
All right. I won't go through all the details, but this company sent him this really highly coveted guitar by accident. He did the right thing by trying to call them back and return it and say...
How hard did he try?
We did it several times.
Several times.
And they continued to put us on hold for extended periods at a time, so we just left it up to them. All right, fine, if you're going to do that.
Were they putting you on hold for like the length of a Bay City Roller song or a Led Zeppelin song?
A John Bonham drum solo, yeah.
All right.
Or Traffic, Low Spark, and High-Heeled Boys.
But now tell me this, because I said to Kevin, and I don't know for sure, I'm obviously not a lawyer... I said, I'm pretty sure if a company sends you something, legally, it is yours.
If
Isn't
you pay
it?
For it, I think if a company sends you something, it's usually under the guise of you will be paying for it. Have they sent you a bill?
I've had this guitar in my possession for quite a long time now.
Like over 3 years?
Since college. Since like my freshman year of college.
Then you're fine.
Statute of guitar limitations
Agreed.
Kicks in at this point. But it's an expensive guitar. It's a highly coveted guitar.
And you would think like something like that would be tracked, right?
You don't fret that they might be coming after you?
Ah, I get what you did there. Woo!
He didn't even do that on purpose.
What?
You struck a chord. How did this happen? Did you register for a sweepstakes? How did they even...
Well, I was telling Bill, my brother at the time wanted like a bass and amp starter package for Christmas. So I come home from school, from class one day in college, and there's the package sitting on the front porch. So I bring it inside and put it in my parents' closet so he doesn't see it. The next day, come home to another package, and it's this guitar. And I'm asking my parents, what happened? Did you guys order something else to surprise? Never got ordered. They just sent it to us.
I think legally that guitar belongs to him.
Well, yeah, now.
I think it... Well, even...
Although,
I mean,
if they're listening
the
online, don't mention the company.
Right, don't mention
I'm
the company.
Sure.
It was a Fender.
But he but he attempted to right the wrong and say, look, I want to return this. I didn't pay for it. You sent it to me. They didn't seem interested in that.
How does that happen?
And I will say, it wasn't from the guitar company directly. It was from like a third party...
A supplier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Give me the name of that place, because I'm going to get on their mailing list.
I don't want to. Not on the... I'll get
no,
off
the air.
Don't you think it's his? I know now it definitely is, but once you make an attempt or two and they're not returning your calls or they're not picking up, they sent it to them.
Well, that's my thinking, too. Like a high-end piece of musical gear like that, they should track, right? And then eventually be able to say, okay, well, it got sent to this person on accident. Let's give them a call.
Right.
Or here's your invoice.
Right.
Well, yeah. If it got sent to you on accident, don't you suppose they don't know where it got sent?
Well, that's not my problem.
Just give them Bill's address if they call. It was sent there.
Which I need to get that, Bill.
Yeah,
I got to send
that's
something.
Fine.
God, and I am too late. I'm over the 60 days of returning a pair of Levi's I bought for my son, and I can't return it.
No.
Well, that's not fair.
The world's not fair.
I just want credit because it didn't fit. It was the right size, but they
Why
ran smaller.
Why did you
smaller.
Wait so long?
Because it was buried on my dining room table.
That's not the right... Tell them that and see what happens.
I was going to say that he was out of town.
For 2 months.
Well, he was in Ireland. I was going to say he studied abroad for a semester and didn't try him on before he left.
We just had an episode at our house where we returned something past the time.
Yeah, and what happens?
They take it.
I just want
credit. Even though it was past the time.
Yeah, and I felt terrible, but, you know, Sharon and I, we looked at each other and we're like, you know... The customer service is great. It's a wonderful company, but it's just not for us. And we called them back. And I think people are just much more forward than we think they are.
Sure.
And they were great and took it, and we've got something new.
Oh, how about that?
Well, I'm just going to call them then and say, you know, my son was in Ireland for a year and didn't try him on until he came home.
A year?
No, but he studied there abroad because he technically studied for the 8 days he was there.
So he was there for a week, but you could write it in a certain way where it looks like where they
it's
go.
Not
Wait,
lying.
Does that say a year or a week? What does that say? It's four letters. I can't read them.
Who gets free stuff and where do we get it? Larry, what'd you get for free?
Yeah, back in the 70s, my son was 14 and we went to Sears to get his first shotgun. And that was
a rite of passage, my friend.
What's that?
It's a rite of passage, my friend.
Yeah, that was. Anyway, we went there, and we ordered it up, and I went back a week or so later to pick it up, and they said, I want to pay for it. And they said, well, it's paid for. I said, no, it can't be paid for. We didn't pay for it yet. No, it's paid for.
Wow.
Well, I told my son, I says, you hold the money. It was $100 then. I says, you hold the money, put it in the bank for 1 year, because he wanted to spend it. I said, no, you're not going to spend it. I says, you hold it for 1 year. If they don't come after you after, you know, in that year,
it's yours.
You got a free shotgun, and they never came. You know, and,
how about that?
What's that?
How about that? That's great.
I said, it's not paid for. And he said, oh, yeah, it's paid for. So, well, that was before credit cards, too. So,
Larry, that was a good lesson you taught your son, too. Just hang on to it to be on the safe side, because we may get a bill.
Right.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Not now. I'll go to Romania or something.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you so much.
The problem, of course, with getting a gun at Sears is the gun always smells like caramel corn.
Is that such a bad thing?
No.
Hey, Jack,
it was bad.
We don't have a lot of time here, Jack, but what happened with you? Free stuff.
Actually, real quickly, is I found a huge box, two of us found a huge crate. I thought it was empty. Went to push it off the road, and it was full. It had a beautiful Magnavox TV, stereo, the whole big console thing. This is a few years ago. it actually literally fell off the back of a truck. Tried to find, tried called the trucking company, even called down in Alabama, where the truck was from, and they finally said to me, "Listen, this thing's already been a claim. It's going to take too much to get it back down here, etc. Go ahead and keep it." It was huge. It was like a $2,000 item. This was about 20 years ago.
I always thought that was a phrase. People go, "Yeah, it just fell off a truck." You go, "Well, that's a phrase. That doesn't happen."
I gave it to a lady who was having some trouble in the town that I was working in, and with kids and that. So I gave it to her, and I said, "I'm giving this to you." And she said, "Well, you know, I don't know if I can really take it." I said, "It fell off the truck." She laughed at that. She thought I stole it. I said, "No, please, believe me, it really fell off a truck."
That's awesome, and you did a good deed, Jack.
But I mean, I trust. Tried and tried and tried to return this thing, say, "You need to come and pick this thing up." And nope, they didn't do it, so I finally gave it away.
How'd you get it off the road? Did you have to get a backhoe?
There were two of us that we pushed it off. We pushed it on the side. We came back later with a truck, and we picked it up, and we got it up into the truck.
Wow.
And we took it back, and I won't tell you the city I worked for, but I worked for the police department.
Oh, and, ironically.
And we, honest to God, tried to return this thing, but...
No luck.
Anyway, that's the story.
How about that? Good for you, Jack. Nicely done.
Thank you so much for sharing. What a good thing.
Yes, it is. Mm. Yes, it is. All right.
We have more people who want to talk about free stuff, so can
stick around. If you can hold, we'd love to talk to you. 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill and Wendy. Let me catch you up very, very quickly.
Who gets a free ride?
Kevin, our producer, told us a story earlier about getting a guitar in the mail, a very highly coveted, very expensive guitar in the mail. He tried his best to return it, explained to them that they sent it to him by accident, couldn't get him on the phone, so he kept it, spent 3 years. I said legally he did everything he could have possibly have done. That guitar belongs to him. They sent it to him. He didn't solicit for it. They just sent it to him.
I barely wanted it. I couldn't get rid of it if I even
tried.
How
about that?
You know?
I'll take it.
Steve says he'll take it.
You know what? It's occupied at the moment.
I'll buy it off you for $20.
Look at all the people. Everybody has had a similar experience. I'm shocked.
Who gets free stuff, Chris? You got something free?
Yeah. A couple of Christmases ago, a box from Amazon showed up on our doorstep addressed to us. And so my wife and I opened it up, and it was a very nice brand new Panini maker.
Oh, nice.
We looked at each other, and neither of us had ordered it. And we looked at the address line who sent it, and we had no idea who that person was. And so we figured that we would keep it, and they would contact Amazon and, you know, get a new one shipped out. However, we did end up writing that person a nice thank you note saying that the Panini maker went to a very good home.
That is so funny, Chris. I thought a Panini maker, though, would be more work. Like, you know, I don't need this.
They're fantastic.
Did you use it or did you re-gift it?
Oh, no, we use it all the time. And every time we use it, we get a nice little chuckle.
Oh, is that funny? Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thanks, Chris. I know Donald Trump's always talking about making America great again, but as Chris pointed out, America's a country where you can just get a free Panini maker. They just send it to you. It doesn't get better than that.
It doesn't get better than that. John, what did you get for free?
This is John Cannon.
Hi, it's Wendy Snyder and Bill Leff. How's it going? Kevin Richter producing the show today.
What happened to you, John? What did you get?
Okay. For about 5 years, we were getting a huge, very large poinsettia every Christmas sent to us by a very well-known Chicago attorney. And I called the florist each year. And they insisted, no, this is sent to the right person, the right address. And after about 5 years, in fact, they were so big we gave them to our church because we couldn't even fit it in the house. It was such a beautiful plant.
Yeah.
So anyway, after 5 years, they stopped abruptly. And that Christmas, right afterwards, we were reading in the magazine section of the Chicago Tribune an article about this well-known attorney and his wife, and their interior designer was named John Cannon.
Oh, so it was the wrong John Cannon.
Oh, is that funny? And the other John Cannon got ripped off and never got his poinsettia.
For 5 years, didn't get his poinsettia, but when they found out, they stopped mine, and apparently that's the end of it.
Oh,
but anyway, we tried to call, but nobody, they insisted, so we kept the poinsettia.
That is so funny. Was it Briskman or Briskman or Peter Francis Geraci?
Balkan and Doran?
You don't have to say who it is.
No, you don't have to say.
Well, the person that answered the phone told me not to mention his name.
Oh, okay. All right.
We're just curious. Thank you so much, John Cannon.
Thanks, John Cannon.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye.
You're the right one in our book.
See, it was pertinent. We didn't know when he announced his last name. We didn't know that it was pertinent to the story.
We sure didn't. Hi, Caleb.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Fine. What's your last name, Caleb? you don't have to say. You don't have to tell us. You don't have to tell us. That's fine. What did you get for free?
So I am a person I can't pass up free stuff, you know?
Who can, really?
Yeah. So I was driving down the road one time, and I saw what I thought was a piano on the side of the road. So I drove home. I live with my parents, and I said, hey, can I borrow your car? It was a small upright piano, I thought. So I went out there, and it was an electric organ. And the guy who lived at the house was out there, and he said, you want to get rid of it? Well, you want to take that? And I said, sure. But I had to call my dad and both my brothers to get it in the car because it weighed about like 400 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, but I got it up in my room now, and my dad said when I move out, I'm going to have to take that with me.
Did you learn to play at least, Caleb?
I mean, I play a little bit, but it just makes a whole lot of noise, and I can wake up anyone on the street when I play it.
Well, you got to explain to them it's free. It's out of your control. Yeah. Who's going to say no to a free organ?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a dirty joke,
Bill. No,
it's
not.
Quit winking.
That's your mind. I didn't
My girlfriend, Camille, her father was a musician, and when he passed away, she asked if we wanted an organ. And I said, yeah, so it's in our basement. And Caleb, you're right. There's really no volume control. The older organs are just off and loud.
Sure.
Oh, I looked up the serial number, and it's from the 50s, so it's really old.
That's amazing.
It's just there on the side of the road. It's yours.
Yeah. Yeah, and someone else had come and didn't want the organ. They just wanted the bench for it.
Wow. That's not right. All right.
No,
well,
I mean, it's an organ. Take it.
Please.
I'm with you.
Caleb.
Thank you, Caleb.
Take care.
Where's the tulips joke?
I don't know.
They're my favorite flowers.
Very quickly, I want to say, since we're talking about businesses doing things like this, I told you the story about when I was in Disneyland, I had a very high-end pair of sunglasses in my pocket, and somebody...
Maui Jims.
Somebody threw their arms up in excitement on the Tower of Terror and broke those glasses. The Maui Jim people heard me talking about it and sent me a pair and with a note that said, at Maui Jims, we really care about our customers, so this is our way of saying we're sorry you went through what you went through, but here's your glasses back. Isn't that nice?
That is nice. And somebody actually called and texted when you were talking about your tale of woe and said that Maui Jim guarantees them.
I couldn't believe it. So thank you, Maui Jim. Greatly appreciated.
Is it just one guy?
Yeah, it's a guy named Maui Jim.
Because there's not just one Green Lantern. Is there one Maui Jim?
Yeah, it's just one guy. All right, we will take a quick break, and then it is Tech Tuesday, so we'll check in with Bridget Carey from CNET Next, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Technology is rolling forward, and whether or not you want to roll along with it, we have help from... Bridget Carey, CNET senior editor, and she is also host of the CNET Update. Bridget, how are you today?
Hey, doing good. How are you?
Well, there's some news on Facebook. Every once in a while I say, that's it. I'm going to quit using Facebook. I'm going back to MySpace because sometimes people are just so mean on Facebook.
It'd be pretty lonely on, MySpace.
Even the guy, what was it, Tom that invented? He's not on
it
either.
He bolted. He's out.
All right, I won't go back to MySpace, but it seems like Facebook is the way to stay in touch, and there are some new things that I just found out yesterday about Facebook, and then I wanted you to explain it. Someone, through Bill, said, I sent Wendy a message, and I checked my message inbox. I do have the app, the Messenger, and I couldn't find it, but there's a way to find secret messages.
Yeah, there's always an annoyance when you realize that there's a whole other inbox that you haven't really paid attention to inside of Messenger, and that kind of got a lot of buzz the other week or the past couple of days. In Facebook Messenger, which if you have an app, it's a separate app, there is, like, if someone sends you a message when they're not your friend, sometimes things get, like, put off to the side, like, almost like a filter, like, with the intention of Facebook thinking that it could be spam, but, you know, I found hundreds of messages in there at once.
Wait, you said hundreds, didn't you? Did you say hundreds?
Yes. Wow. Yes, because, well, I have a text show, so when people want to reach out to me, I don't even realize that they're doing so because it'll be hidden in some folder. So if you want to see how you can find this stuff out, just, you know, Google, you know, Facebook, like secret inbox, and you'll be able to get instructions on how to take you through that. But, yeah, so it's a little interesting that there's always, like, something that you didn't realize was there, and it can be irritating for sure.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe how many I haven't seen. Look at all that.
Yeah, and Wendy's nearing, I'd say, nearing 100 yourself.
And there's a really easy way to do it. You just go into settings on the Facebook Instant Messenger app, settings, and then hit people, and then it says notifications, and when you click on that, it says see unfiltered messages. And boy, some of them you're going to wish you didn't see because they're like from probably 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm going through mine now. It's like months ago, and they're just people are like saying hello or I had questions, and I had no idea.
You're going to be busy tonight.
To protect you from strangers. Yeah, Facebook just tries to protect you from strangers messaging you, but then it makes you wonder, wait, you know, who was trying to reach out to me? Because that's how people use Facebook in a business sense when they can't get a hold of you through LinkedIn.
Yeah, but now I don't use LinkedIn at all. But I don't have any business sense.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, speaking of Facebook, there's a big announcement that's coming up this afternoon. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. So in just a little while, Mark Zuckerberg is going to take the stage in San Francisco and talk about all the new things coming to Facebook. And it's a gathering once a year of developers, software developers. And the focus seems to be all around chatbots for Messenger. So the way things are going right now in chatting apps is that businesses and just big websites too want to have these automatic robots that you can talk to get answers on things. Or I guess think of it, instead of calling customer service or instead of calling the restaurant itself to make a reservation, you would just chat it up on a bot inside of Messenger, and everyone wants to be the place you do that. So Mark Zuckerberg is probably going to talk about why it's a great idea to program your company to have its own chat bot.
Bridget, I'm sorry for being so naive, but if I go to a customer service website and I'm not physically talking to somebody, I'm typing in a question and getting a response, I'm not talking to a human, am I? I'm talking to a computer.
Right. I mean, sometimes the human takes over, you know, for like when you have a sales question and there's not an automatic reply, you know, there'll be someone or a group of people at a desk who will just jump on it. But for the most part, what we're talking about here is no human at all involved.
Wow.
And Facebook's even been testing AI and how artificial intelligence. It can make its own version. Right. How it can make its own version of Siri to do these kinds of things. Microsoft just talked all about this a few weeks ago, how they want bots in Skype, and they encourage people to like make, you know, ways that if you're chatting with someone in Skype, you know, the company can respond to things.
Yeah.
So it goes all the way from, so you don't need apps for anything anymore, right? Instead of pulling up a separate app to do that reservation, just go on the Messenger service of your choice. That's the future they all are fighting for now.
Yeah.
Can I make a suggestion to anyone listening? To prove that I am not a robot, I have to punch in these wavy letters, and I can never do it. It takes me 5 times because I can't figure out if it's a V, 2 Vs, or a W.
Right.
And why can't they make it easier?
Well, Google actually came out with a version that is a little easier, but it's still kind of a challenge sometimes. It's photo test. So what they'll do, instead of, they call it CAPTCHA, instead of like the wavy G, and you're like, that is upside down 9, I don't know what I'm looking at.
Which would be a 6.
What it is, yeah.
You ruined the code. come on.
It'll be like 6 or 4 pictures of something that has the same coloring, and it'll be like 2 dogs and an actual hot dog. It's like, but they all look the same, kind of the way they're shot. And like, click the ones that are dogs, or click the ones that are pizzas, or maybe the 4th photo has the coloring of a pizza, but it's not a pizza. And that's how they're now testing if you're human, which is actually a little bit It's a little bit less frustrating, but sometimes you're just kind of like, okay, I feel like I'm in kindergarten again doing picture games.
Oh, my God. If we wanted to do a puzzle, we'd just go to puzzles.com.
True.
And then you'd have to type those to get in. We have someone who learned a secret from a childhood friend about Facebook. This is Rob. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. We're talking to Bridget Carey. What's your Facebook secret?
Well, it's not really a secret, but I always thought that you couldn't send people messages if you weren't friends with them. And so when they had this thing came up, what, a week or so ago, where there was something on there that said, you know, hey, there's secret messages at Facebook. And I'm like, well, really? I looked on there, clicked on it, and I had like a dozen messages over the last several years. And many of them were like, when you probably make posts on like the Blackhawks or the Cubs or something like this, you'd say something. They'd get some message that says, go Hawks, you know, and I never saw it.
Yeah.
And I saw this one, and I recognized the name somewhat, and I clicked on it, and it said, hey, is this the same Robbie? Of course, my name was Robbie when I was a kid. Is this the same Robbie that used to live on, you know, blank, blank lane in this town? If it's not, I'm sorry to bother you. And I was like, wow. So I clicked on her name and sent her a friend request and responded to it and said, yeah, this is the same one. And she accepted my friend request like a few minutes later, and we were messaging back and forth and getting caught up on, it was from 40 years ago.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's like, and you didn't even know it was there.
So check your secret box. That's what we have to tell people. Thank you, Robbie. We appreciate you sharing
that.
Thank
you.
Tell that to strangers, Wendy, and see what kind of reaction you get.
That is a cute story. Come on, Bill. You did that. Some guy was in World War One, and he had his sweetheart. And
I love hearing stuff like that.
It's a nice little reunion.
Sure.
All right. What happens if you have a Windows PC and all of a sudden you get that blue screen and your computer is about to explode? There might be a way to still get more information.
Yeah, because, you know, you kind of panic. You're like, error, number, and it's like a string of numbers and letters, and you're trying to go, what went wrong? And you would write it down sometimes. But in the upcoming Windows update, which is in, there's no date, but they say summer. When you get that blue screen of death, there'll be a QR code that you can scan with your phone, so you can be taken to a website that gives you more information, hopefully, a way to figure out what's causing that devastating crash. So Microsoft's trying to make them a little more friendly, sort of. But it's still terrible to get those screens of death. But at least now you can take your phone, take a picture of the screen to be linked to a website that'll take you to more info.
It's worth a try, because when you get that blue screen, it's pretty much done anyway.
Sure.
And someone has texted, if you don't have that specific Messenger app with Facebook, then you're not going to be able to find those secret hidden messages.
Oh,
is that right, Bridget?
Oh, I have to look that up, because I know, I mean, you don't need the app to see messages in general, because you can go on your desktop computer and you can poke around there. But I haven't explored that, so that would be interesting. Because I think either way, Facebook's going to filter messages for you, but maybe it's in a different place.
But you can get it on the desktop, that's for sure. And what else do we have coming up on the CNET update for today?
Well, we're going to be following what other information Zuckerberg's going to be sharing. I mean, besides bots, you know, maybe they'll be talking a lot about this new live video that they launched recently that takes on Periscope, and be curious to see what other kinds of things he's pushing. Because, you know, Facebook also owns Instagram, and it also owns Oculus for the VR, and it also runs WhatsApp chat. And so there's been a lot of talk on all those things lately, and maybe they'll focus a little bit on those things too.
Zuckerberg is going to own us someday too. Thank you so much, Bridget. And you can go to CNET.com and look for the CNET update with senior editor Bridget Carey. Thank you so much on this Tech Tuesday. Talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure.
Why is there such a big delay on this phone?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know. All right, a break, some news, and more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, one of our favorite guests has returned. Rick Ran is the co-founder of the World's Fair Memorabilia Show. And every year that Rick comes in, I am amazed by some of the stuff he brings. You have gotten some great pictures from Rick, and we'll tell you how you can go to the 22nd Annual World's Fair Memorabilia Show, which is happening this Sunday at the Elk Grove Holiday Inn in Elk Grove Village. First of all, hi, Rick. How are you? Thanks for coming again.
Hey, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
You have just such amazing things that bring us back to a time like Bozo, for instance. You brought me a little something. I was never lucky enough to go to the Bozo show.
Nor was I, but I remember running home at noon for lunch and like at 12:30 watching the, you know, grand prize game to see how many silver dollars were in bucket number six.
Well, Mr. Richie Rich, Bill Leff, got to go.
And they'll add a silver dollar every day till someone wins them all.
With the giant Tootsie Roll.
And you get the new mode hosiery with the no-bind top.
And a Schwinn bike.
And a Bun candy bar.
Yes. Those were good times.
My daughter got one bucket when she was actually picked for it when we went in 89. And she was only three. I am flea. So we have the video of it with Bozo. And she got one bucket, a free like a sparkly or something, a little horse, a little sparkly horse. She was thrilled.
If I remember right, they wouldn't let you miss that first bucket. There were kids
sometimes.
Try again. Yeah,
right.
they would give them a mulligan and let them take
a
second
shot. She was thrilled.
She
was only three. She didn't know.
Oh, that's excellent.
But then all bets are off. They don't care if you miss number two.
Right. No leaning.
So you brought a ticket from the original Bozo from 1983, and an interesting day, because when you took your daughter to that taping of Bozo, you did what afterwards?
Well, I had some friends come with us. She actually called up a friend of my wife and called up and scammed a couple tickets for her kids. So she drove us down there, and then I hopped on the Addison Street bus to go to the Cubs playoff game in 89. It was 89, so I got to see the Bozo show at like 4 o'clock. Hopped on the bus and went to the Cubs game, saw him win a playoff game.
That's a good day.
That's a full day.
Yes, it was.
How did you become such an archivist of all things Chicago? What's in your chemical makeup for that happened?
I've always collected stuff like comic books. I started out collecting comic books in the 60s, and I just started collecting more and more stuff on the Chicago World's Fair. And it was really an interesting time in 1933 and 34. It brought 39 million people to Chicago over 2 years.
39 million people?
39 million.
Wow.
That just blows me away. And now this particular show that's going on, the 22nd Annual World's Fair Memorabilia Show, it's happening this Sunday, the 17th, from 10 to 4 p.m., Elk Grove Holiday Inn on Bussey Road in Elk Grove Village. Admission is a mere $6, $5 for seniors. You can find out more information at worldsfairshow.com.
Right. At this show, we have about a display of items, including items from the Enchanted Island, which is a child's paradise at the World's Fair. Here's a trolley poster from it.
The artwork is spectacular.
Yeah, and it actually includes Wizard of Oz, the Tin Woodsman, and it had a giant coaster wagon. I showed you a photo of the giant coaster wagon, which was by Radio Flyer, but it was done by Park Ridge native Alfonso Iannelli.
That's giant. It's as big as a building.
It's a giant coaster wagon, which Radio Flyer is still in Chicago, and still they have a giant wagon which they'll bring around to events and certain stores, but they don't have the kid in the top of it, but it's pretty cool. That actually had a store inside of that building. And then you could buy regular size wagons, or you could buy little souvenir wagons.
Oh, look at that.
My niece just had a baby, so my great niece Adeline, and my niece just said, you know, her birthday's coming up, in June, and we could really use a Radio Flyer wagon. So still to this day, it just has a special place in everyone's hearts.
Oh, yeah. Although
they're not deep enough, I got to say.
They should be deeper.
They should be.
They should absolutely be deeper. Now, the one you're showing us, the old Radio Flyer giant wagon, it's about a story high, and then there's a boy on top that's another story and a half, maybe two.
Yeah.
Is he made of wood? He looks like
I believe he's probably carved.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
Can you see any of these items that are up for bid on the website?
You can see some of the posters on the website, but we will have, there'll be about 20 items, 20 tables of items for sale from the 1933 fair and also the 1893 Columbian Exposition. We also show home movies and newsreels on video from the 1933 World's Fair, and there'll be a bunch of dealers with World's Fair memorabilia you can look at, trade, or, if you're looking for something specific.
I remember seeing them in newsreels, and I would get so excited to see them the way it was covered in newsreels back then. It was so much fun to see. You've seen those, obviously.
Oh,
right?
The newsreels are great. I mean, I remember one where there's a guy going through the turnstile, the narrator, Ed Hurley or something like that. Well, it must be Fat Day at the Fair. You know, it's like completely
he says that in the newsreel.
Yeah, he actually says that because it's a person.
Hello, Mr. Chubby. I hope you're enjoying the fair.
Exactly.
It's the World's Fair Memorabilia Show, 22nd annual, out in Elk Grove Village this Sunday from 10 to 4. What are some of the unusual items? Are there some really bizarre ones?
I have uniforms. It won't be at the show, but I have, you know, like a guide's uniform. One time a man brought in a dress from a woman who worked at the Western Union exhibit at the World's Fair. Someone brought in a roller chair once, like the kind you'd probably see at Brookfield Zoo back in the old days.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the fiberglass kind of thing.
And it was a roller chair, and at the World's Fair, they would have college kids for, probably, I think it was 50 cents an hour, would push you around in a roller chair, or they also had rickshaw. They had college athletes who would pull you around a rickshaw if you could afford the, you know, dollar an hour, if you had the big money back then.
That kills me. Listen, a dollar an hour.
Right. That's how it should be. Are you still amazed, like, when you attend these shows, somebody must bring in something that you say to yourself, well, I've been doing this a long time, but I've never seen that.
Oh, yeah. Usually there's always something new that, you know, they just made so many thousands of island items. I mean, just pamphlets that were given out at the show. I have probably 1,300 that were given out at the World's Fair by different companies, yeah. Brunswick, Shell, you know, all the different companies gave out brochures. So there's all kinds of amazing things.
Rick Rann is the co-founder of the World's Fair Memorabilia Show. The 22nd annual World's Fair Memorabilia Show is happening this Sunday, the 17th, from 10 to 4 p.m. at the Elk Grove Holiday Inn. It's 1000 Bussey Road in Elk Grove Village. Again, $6 to get in and just get a little history lesson when you go in. You can go to worldsfairshow.com for more information. We'll take a quick break. And if you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. And after waiting for more than 20 years, the band Chicago is finally getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Dean Richards has the inside story. That would be Dean Richards has the inside story tonight at WGN TV News at 9. We're on WGN TV News.
We are. Yeah. Rick Rann is here, co-founder of the World's Fair Memorabilia Show. This is the 22nd annual World's Fair Memorabilia Show. It takes place this Sunday, the 17th, from 10 to 4 p.m. at the Elk Grove Holiday Inn. That's on Bussey Road. Admission, this is a bargain, $6, $5 for seniors. You want to go to worldfairshow.com for all your information.
And we have some people who have some items that they could either bring and trade, or can you sell them there too?
Yeah, I mean, you can walk around to the different dealers and see if, because I still collect this stuff, so.
You may be interested.
I bought that Western Union dress, and it really wasn't marked World's Fair, but it sounded good, and then. Mm-hmm. I contacted the Smithsonian Institution, and they actually had the Western Union files, and I purchased for like $20 a digital copy of all the employees that worked there, and sure enough, it's the exact dress.
Wow.
That is wild. All right, well, listener Chris has something. What do you have from the World's Fair?
Hi, Wendy. Well, actually, several years ago, I bought a rather large collection of World's Fair memorabilia from 1933, 1934, and when I was going through it, I came upon a pin, and it was a pin of the Graf Zeppelin, and it had the swastika on the pin of the Graf Zeppelin. From what I could find out, these were given out during German Day that was held at Masonic Temple, and there's a story behind it. I wanted to just clarify if the story is true, that when the captain of the Graf Zeppelin flew over from Germany, he was making a sweep down the lake shore, but in order not to offend the general public, he flew so that only the side with the German colors on the fin were visible, but not the swastika. And is that a true story?
That's what I've heard, what I've read about. I just told Bill that a little while ago, that, you know, they flew it down on the opposite side so the swastika wouldn't be visible. That's what I've read. I wasn't there, but
couldn't they have suggested to the good people over at Graf Zeppelin, hey, just to make everybody a little more comfortable, could we cover that up for the fair? They wouldn't have considered that, huh?
Probably not.
No?
And it would look tacky.
Yeah. Well, as does a swastika, though.
Yeah, true. Good point.
Yeah.
Chris, there's your information. It appears to be true.
Thank you very much, guys.
Have a good one. You should go to the show and check things out. Gary has something from the World's Fair. Gary, what do you have?
Hi, I have a copper cup that is etched on the bottom. I know it's copper because it says solid copper. And the initials WB, and on one side it says, one side of the cup, it says 1934, Century of Progress, Chicago. And then on the back side it says Travel Building. And I was wondering if you had anything like that in your collection or if this had any value.
I have a copper cup like that. I'm not sure if it has a transportation building, but a lot of things they would make and sell as souvenirs, so you could have it etched with your initials, your friend's initials. It's probably worth $15 to $20. Not great value, but it, you know, people still collect that type of thing.
Yeah, it's a keepsake from my wife's grandmother, so we're definitely going to hold on to it.
Are those her initials, the WB?
No.
She was there with the Warner Brothers. They hung out together.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. And a lot of people are intrigued by a lot of this stuff from the World Fair. Somebody wanted to know, why did it end? Why did they stop doing it?
Well, the World's Fair was only supposed to go 1 year. It was supposed to go from May through November 11th of 33. And at the end of around October 33, they still owed some money on the bonds, because it was all done without any public money. It was all privately raised money. No public monies were used. So at the last minute, they decided to hold it over for another year, and it went through May through October 34. And by the end of, by Halloween Day 34, when it ended, they actually had made a little bit of a profit of about $100,000, which was donated to local area institutions.
Yeah. And that was a huge amount of money back then.
Oh, sure, sure. Do they still do, forgive me for not knowing this, but do World's Fairs still exist?
Yeah, they still have them? They have, basically, there's a commission that designates which ones can do it. Like, you know, in 1992, they wanted to do a Chicago World's Fair, so they have to propose it to a commission. And the last one, I think, was in, well, there was probably one after this, but 2010 in Shanghai, China, there was one. Since the world's so small, it's not as, you know, back in 33, they had little villages at the World's Fair. So, you know, you can go in and see what supposedly looked like the Belgian village and the Dutch village.
Yeah.
So it was probably maybe what Epcot Center became.
I guess so.
You know, in the future.
Yeah. I remember Knoxville had one when I was in high school. We didn't
1982,
go to it,
but, Knoxville,
we drove through, but we didn't go.
84, New Orleans.
Oh, right.
86, Vancouver. I mean, they've had them every couple of years, but
that's
they've never
cool.
really made, most of them haven't made a lot of money.
No.
All right, here's an interesting story, and I will forward this information to you. Rick Rand in the studio, co-founder of the World's Fair Memorabilia Show. Again, the show will be happening this Sunday in Elk Grove Village. We'll give you all the details. But this is from a texter. Our great-grandfather, Edward Dunn, with an E at the end, was commissioner of the fair, former Chicago mayor and Illinois governor. Is there anything with his picture on it? We're looking for stuff for next Saturday's family reunion or gathering when he's inducted into the Irish American Hall of Fame at the Irish American Heritage Center. And there's a listener who has information and a phone number in case you find something.
Is it this Saturday?
I think so.
The 16th or the 23rd?
Oh, well, that's a good point, because the memorabilia show is Sunday.
Yeah, if he emails me, if he goes to the website, he can email me and I'll see when I'm going through my stuff, because I have, you know, like who's who in Chicago, because I have like a 14-carat gold badge, which was one of the trustees of the World's Fair. I guess you could wear that and probably get anywhere at the World's Fair, but I have like a who's who in Chicago, so you can look it up and see who the people are. But I'll see if I have anything with his picture on it.
All right, really quickly, because we have a couple of callers here. Larry, what do you have? We have like 30 seconds here.
I have three tickets with the stub still attached from the 1893 Columbia Exposition. I was just wondering if they're worth anything.
Does it have a specific day mentioned on there, like Chicago Day or?
Yeah, there's one specific day. I've got a bunch of tickets without the stub that have all kinds of different days mentioned on it, but I have three with the stub. I'm not at home, so I don't know what they are.
I mean, since Devil in the White City came out, the book, it's been so popular that the tickets have skyrocketed in value, and most of the 1893 tickets are worth $25 and up. There were a whole bunch that with stubs that were sold by the Caxton Company after the World's Fair as souvenirs, like a set of eight. They had like Benjamin Franklin, Handel, Abraham Lincoln. A lot of those are in the $25 to $75 range.
Okay, that doesn't sound like it's quite enough for me to retire then.
Okay, probably
thank
not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
I'm surprised not more, because I see Riverview tickets going for $25 each. So I'm shocked that those
aren't worth more. Well, there was a lot of them that were sold as souvenirs.
Oh, is that why?
It's like the 33 World's Fair. A lot of the tickets, they sold 22 million 1 year, so a lot of them are very common. But they did have tickets for specific days. And if people bring items to the show, we can give them idea worth, or if they could find out if they want to sell it.
How great is this? Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to all these questions and texts. So here's what you need to know. 22nd Annual World's Fair Memorabilia Show. It's going on this Sunday, the 17th, from 10 to 4 p.m. at the Elk Grove Holiday Inn. It's 1000 Bussey Road in Elk Grove Village. A mere $6 to get in, $5 for seniors. You can find out all the details at worldsfairshow.com. And Rick, for people like including Edward Dunn's family, how do they get in touch with you to find out if their stuff is worth something?
You know, if they just Google World's Fair and Rick Rann, R-A-N-N, they'll find it. Or then go to worldsfairshow.com. If they email me, I can, you know, let them know, like with Mr. Dunn, I see if I can find something. Hopefully it's a week from Saturday, because that'll give me more time.
Yeah, because this is before the show. It's not going to work.
Right.
All right, well, thank you so
much,
Rick. Always a pleasure. Thanks for the gifts. I got a Bozo ticket. And
how about that? You can finally go
see
Bozo.
Pictures of Bozo.
It paid off eventually.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. A quick break, then some news. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Kim, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. In the past, you and I have discussed irrational fears, because I have a terrible irrational fear of needles, a fear that was bad when I was a kid. And then you think, well, as I get older, I'll realize that a needle isn't the worst thing in the world, so I'll be able to deal with it. But it's gotten worse.
When's that going to happen?
It has not kicked in yet. I keep waiting for it to kick in.
I have an irrational fear of tornadoes.
You do, don't you?
I really do. If there's a tornado warning, I go into full metal mode, and I grab a flashlight, my cell phone, some batteries, a radio, and I go right down in the basement.
And you've always been this way.
Yeah, pretty much. Very scary to me.
Well, I have learned, thanks to the internet, that we, you and I, and others are not the only people, normal people, who have irrational fears. It turns out your favorite celebrities, your favorite Hollywood stars, the people that make life entertaining on television and the movies and radio, have fears just like yours and mine. They also, Wendy, are afraid of irrational things.
I hope they're worse than ours, because Tinseltown to me is a bunch of freakazoids.
Exactly. Exactly. Nicole Kidman, Wendy, is afraid of butterflies.
All right. That's just
plain ridiculous.
That's ridiculous, Kim. You should not be afraid.
I have a huge fear of turbulence on an airplane. I literally freak out. Okay, but butterflies, they can't even hurt you. They're beautiful to look at. What's a problem?
Turbulence makes perfect sense. You think about,
No, it doesn't.
Well,
to be afraid of it?
Yeah. To say,
it's not right.
Right.
Oh,
I literally freak out.
You know what kind of helped me? Just in a side note, my girlfriend Sue's dad was a pilot at United for a million years, and the very first time I flew was a trip in high school to Hawaii.
Yeah.
So that's a long flight.
Oh, yeah.
And Sue told me her dad would always say, oh, turbulence is just kind of like potholes on the road. And honestly, that put my fear at ease a little bit.
I guess
the next
true.
Until you're
round.
Like, 20,000-something feet up in the air.
Well, yeah, and then the cocktails kicked in, hopefully.
Yeah.
Here's what it says about Nicole Kidman's fear of butterflies. And I don't even know, you know, there's usually words for something, 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 a phobia. I don't even think there is one for butterflies. I think it's that rare of a condition. It says the Australian native has already earned over $300 million in her career, along with bagging a high-profile marriage to superstar Tom Cruise. I'd be more afraid of that than butterflies, being married to Tom Cruise.
Scientology.
Yes. Yes.
That is something to fear.
But despite her numerous acting awards for films like Moulin Rouge and The Hours, Nicole Kidman can't escape her strange fear of butterflies. Kidman is tragically afraid of one of nature's prettiest insects. She can deal with spiders without needing any sort of treatment for anxiety. But when a butterfly comes near her, all bets are off. Her husband, Keith Urban, would do well to watch out for the winged bug when the couple goes for walks together, it says here. Why would you be afraid of butterflies?
I kind of get it. Like, if you take the pretty wings off, then they're just another creepy, gross little creature.
But they're little. She's not afraid of spiders.
Right.
Right, and they don't bite.
Right.
They have, like, the weird
sting.
Eyes. I think they have, like, a weird nose thing, too, that, like, extends. I don't know. I get it. I get that one.
A proboscis?
Sure.
Hibiscus.
And they have flowers?
No, that's
like
hibiscus.
Oh, whatever.
You know what we should do? We should all get a copy of Mothra and send it to her.
Right.
Because then I could see you could be afraid. I know it's a moth, but technically the same winged creature.
I've never heard of this. Now, Johnny Depp's fear is something that you and I have also discussed on the show.
A shower?
No, although he doesn't take them quite as often as some people should, maybe.
And I love him.
Johnny Depp, Wendy, is afraid of clowns.
Oh, that's everyone is.
My youngest son was just scared to death of a clown.
But is it a fear, Kim,
a
or is it just not liking them? I think a lot of people just don't like them. I don't know if it's a fear.
Oh, no, this was a fear.
He was afraid of them.
Oh, my goodness. He couldn't be within 50 feet of a clown.
What would happen?
He'd freak out.
Really?
I mean, especially when he was little. Cry, carry on, like, just cling to us, like.
Wow.
I was unbelievable fear.
My mom took me to the Shriners Circus a million years ago.
Yeah.
And this is why I think I'm afraid of clowns, and a lot of kids, their parents would say, go say hello to the clown.
Right.
Well, I don't want to say hello to the clown. This is a strange makeup person. And they'd kind of push you, go say hi to the clown.
Yeah.
And you know me, I'm not very shy. I was in front of, I cry, I hate them.
Well, they're always making gestures that are exaggerated. Like they're never just in calm mode. They're always moving stuff around, their hands and their face, and
the
making
knife.
Weird, and their knives, right? Don't forget the knives. And they, you know, there's no normal moment with a clown. They're always being big, like bigger than life, you know?
I know, and I do feel guilty because we had the people from the Clown College in here,
right.
And they were so genuinely nice.
Yes, they were.
But it didn't help because then once they put their makeup on,
right.
I couldn't see them as their true souls. I
right.
only saw them as killer clowns.
And also, they're bad at judgment. Like, they know they have a Volkswagen that seats four or maybe five at the best, and yet they insist on piling in a dozen clowns. Why can't one of them figure out the car is built for four or five? Come on. Come on, clowns.
All right, well, that one I understand.
That
butterflies,
one we get.
I still don't get.
Butterflies does not make sense. Carmen Electra, Wendy, is afraid of water, which is lucky because how often do you come in contact with water, really?
Like for drowning purposes, because I'm a little, I have dreams about drowning and I'm pretty afraid of that. But
she,
like,
says,
I won't go into a pool at night if
right,
it's not lit up.
Right.
Certainly not into the ocean because there are creepy things living
yeah,
under there.
I'm with you on that. Carmen Electra made a career out of playing a lifeguard on Baywatch.
Oh, yeah.
So it seems just a bit shocking to hear that this bombshell.
With flotation devices.
Is absolutely.
You saying she has those built in, or
yes,
what are you saying?
Yes,
right,
I am.
Right.
She doesn't need those stupid
floaties.
Wing, yes. She's got her own.
The bombshell, it says here, is absolutely terrified of water. Electra may not need an anxiety disorder treatment over the affair, however, but the beautiful actress has reportedly stated how much water has freaked her out her entire life. Apparently, seeing an ocean on television or even being near the waves is enough to send chills down her spine.
How was she on that show
yeah,
then?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't
how
know.
Could she do that?
I don't know. It's
green
a testament
screen.
To what a fantastic actress she is.
And you know what? I always feel safe when Hasselhoff's around.
Yeah. No matter what the problem is, if Hasselhoff is around, you know things are going to end well, don't you?
Yep.
All right. More strange fears of your favorite stars. Do you have a strange fear? 312-981-7200. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We're talking about irrational fears of the stars. Nicole Kidman's afraid of butterflies. None of us can figure that out. Johnny Depp is afraid of clowns. We're all on board with that one. Carmen Electra, afraid of water so far.
847 has commented on the butterfly fear.
Yeah.
This person says, I run away when I see a butterfly because it has no control when it's flying. It's like it can fly in your mouth if you're not careful. It's like they're on drugs.
Right.
But I don't think they're, I mean, it might taste funny, but.
And you could probably outrun because of their flight pattern, even if one was coming at you, even if, I mean, worst case scenario is, yeah, it goes in your mouth for a second, but. It's not the, and I don't know anyone who has had that situation and swallowed one. So the odds are against that. Orlando Bloom is afraid of pigs. Don't do that to Orlando Bloom. If Orlando Bloom was sitting here, he would have wet his pants just now. Jennifer Love Hewitt, Wendy, is afraid of elevators.
Yeah, that's, I could see that.
I had a friend, Rob, who lived here in town, who was so afraid of elevators, he wouldn't take one under any circumstances. Lived on the sixth floor of his building and took the stairs up and down every day. So afraid of elevators. What, I mean.
It could fall.
It could fall, but the odds
you could
are
get stuck
so
in, there
in your favor.
A ne'er-do-well.
Right. Steve Dale, our friend Steve Dale was stuck in an elevator once.
And
remember?
Did a show from
did
it.
Did a show from his elevator. Yep.
That's
yep.
when the show must go on statement really makes sense.
Right. Right. Matthew McConaughey is afraid of revolving doors.
I I have a lot of anxiety when I approach a revolving door because there's not enough room. It's like if you go to get in the next open slot, mm-hmm. you're kind of in the way of the person coming out.
Right.
And I always do like a stutter step because it's like, oh, should I get that one?
Yeah.
Should I speed up and get that one or relax and take a breath and go in the next vacant one?
But what's the worst that could happen?
You get hit in the face with the door.
Fingers
get stuck.
Yeah, I guess.
It takes a lot of timing. Again, I remind you, when I'm at Disney getting off the rides on that moving sidewalk,
mm-hmm.
it's very hard for me to judge that. I know kids do it, elderly people.
I would love to see that. I don't know. I know this is selfish of me, but I would just love to see that moment.
I haven't fallen, but it's like, Jim, take my purse. I have to hold on. It's just a timing thing that I am not very good at.
Haven't you had the characters point and laugh at you at Disney World when this happens?
No, but that's my goal someday, and we're going back this year.
I can't imagine. Matthew McConaughey is like one of the suavest guys on the planet. I just, for him to avoid a revolving door is a funny moment to me.
He should have a fear of someone sitting next to him in a car and talking back to him.
Right, in his Lincoln.
He's used to just being there by himself.
I know.
All right, we have
I know.
A sad story.
Oh, no.
Someone who is afraid of water. Elizabeth, you have a tale to tell?
Yes, my sister and I were 11 months apart. We were, I'm the oldest of nine kids. She always had a fear of water. And it ended up that she drowned at the age of 38. She hit her head when she was going into a whirlpool, and she was alone.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So do you think somehow, I know this sounds crazy, there was something in her that knew that water could eventually be the end of her? Do you think she had that kind of premonition somehow?
I really think she did. My parents were born in Ireland, so we are very superstitious.
Yeah.
I always, you know, it was horrible, of course, at the time, but, you know, I thought about it many times. This was like 16 years ago. I really think that she knew.
Wow.
You know, and that's why she was afraid.
Although, do you also think, like, sometimes, you know, your irrational fears can take complete control over you?
Well, sure. I mean, yeah, I think that can happen. I'm terrified of spiders. You know, and spider is so small and, you know,
right.
I freeze. I get absolutely terrified.
Even a small, like a household spider, if you see one in your house, that's all, it does you in.
Yes, I will scream. I'd be better with somebody with a gun than a spider.
What about a spider with a gun? What would that do? That would be the worst thing in the world.
You know how tiny the gun would
have to
be?
It'd have to be a small gun, yeah?
Well, so sorry about your sister, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you very much. And I wanted to say to Bill, I work at a private tennis club. We haven't seen you in a while.
Which club is it?
Should I say?
Well, it's private.
Oh, it's private. It's none of my business. I apologize. I remember we've met. You and I have met, right?
Yes, I knew your voice.
Okay. That's it. Well, I will be back there soon to spread merriment and cheer. Thank you, Elizabeth.
All right, bye.
I'm going to dress like a spider next time.
You'll show her.
Right.
I think I have a spider
private
costume.
Club. Sorry, sir. We don't allow spiders in our club. Oh, yeah?
All right. You get afraid of elevators. There might be a reason for this. Kevin, what's your story?
All right. It's my story, but it's actually my wife. So if for your last caller, yes, irrational fears. So she had a job with DePaul, so she would call on for donations to support the school. So she would call on major companies, typically in very high-rise buildings. She's like, I hate the elevators. When you get into the elevator with her, you would think she's a cat, just wants to
bad?
Well, oh, God, jump to the ceiling and, you know, put her claws up there. And I always told her, I said, you have to realize these are very well-maintained things. They don't just drop. They don't just, you know, disappear.
Sure.
So I go down, she's late at night, she's in the Santa Fe building, so I'm waiting in the car out on Michigan Avenue. Comes, you know, 10, 15 minutes after when I'm supposed to pick her up, and she's not out. So I go and I park the car, I go into the building, there's an information desk, there are two security agents, and they're frantic. They know that there's an elevator that they can't find, and people are pushing the buttons She's in there with one other person.
What's worse than not being able to find an elevator? That's awful.
So they called the fire department. So they couldn't find out where the elevator actually had stopped.
Like which floor? Yeah.
Well, yeah. So it ended up happening that because there isn't a basement, it had dropped below the main floor.
Oh no.
And so maybe that's why they couldn't find it. So the fire department had to pry the doors open, pull her up by her arms out of the unit. She tore her skirt, and all I heard for weeks and months after was, "I told you,
right.
I told you, they're dangerous."
Wow, yeah, that's terrible.
It is. But she's still alive, and she's staying on the ground level on most of her calls.
I would too. Good call. Well, thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too,
Kevin. Somebody sued somebody. They got hit in the face with a revolving door and got $10 million.
Really?
So you
revolving doors now are heavier than ever. I have no idea why. You've noticed this too, right? Just in pushing it, it takes all your strength just to move it to the next segment. I don't know why.
That's why you get in behind a nice, strong guy like Steve Bertrand.
Always. Always
make
follow
sure he
Steve
does the
Bertrand
pushing.
On
pushing.
Too.
Oops.
Always. Always. Just very quickly, let me wrap this up. Matt Damon is afraid of reptiles. Keanu Reeves is afraid of darkness.
Oh, I will shed light on him.
And Billy Bob Thornton, and this is the strangest one of all, Billy Bob Thornton is afraid of antique furniture.
I don't believe that.
It says it on the internet. Can't possibly be wrong.
He should be afraid of his own shadow.
We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Kim. Good job. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff cannot be found. He went away for lunch somewhere and never came back. He's getting maybe candy. Actually, he had to take care of some business. He had a special assignment. Is that just our common thing now?
Yeah, he's on assignment.
On assignment. That's what people do all the time. Well, I'm glad that I have Kim Gordon here because I just had a salad for lunch. And these days you can combine so many different things in a salad that you'd really never think would be good together. Like, for instance, Granny Smith apples and cranberries and
love
walnuts.
That. The harvest salad.
Yes.
I love that. That's one of my favorites with chicken. Delicious.
Even without the chicken, it's okay. But if you need your protein, that is a good way to do it.
Salmon on top.
You know, salmon honestly is like the only fish I cannot eat.
Oh, really? Oh, I could eat it every day.
And people say you just haven't had it prepared correctly. And that might be it, but isn't it a fishy-tasting fish?
It has a distinct flavor. It's not a mild fish. It does have a distinct flavor, so if it's not your thing, it's just not your thing.
But I've heard that if you use like a ginger sauce or something on top of it, that it kind of disguises the... because it tastes fishy.
Yeah. I use like a miso marinade sometimes or even like just teriyaki.
So something kind of strong.
Yeah, something kind
of... So you're covering up the taste of it,
basically.
Yeah, a little
bit. But I don't mind it, though. I do like it.
There's also a really good salad that has strawberries and goat cheese and pecans in it. But years ago, you'd have a salad you'd never think of putting fruit and nuts in it.
No, and I do that all the time at home.
All right, well, there is something I found at AOL. It's a website called Oh Bite It, and I wish that that wasn't taken because I would like it to be my website. Oh Bite It. And they've come up with some unique food combinations, and I don't know if these are things that I would like to try, so I would like to run this past you. Kevin, I feel like you would try a lot of things.
Yeah, I like food.
What about pizza tacos?
I just had a cheeseburger taco. So, yes, I would have a pizza taco.
A cheeseburger taco. How does that even work?
It was like ground beef, and then there was like pickles chopped up on it and like onion and stuff. It was okay.
So it's called a taco just in its presentation.
Yeah, if it's in a tortilla.
So it's basically
tortilla.
Instead of a bun, it's in a taco shell.
Right.
Not bad.
It was okay.
All right, well, this is a pizza taco. It's all kinds of pizza ingredients inside what appears to be a taco shell. I don't know if I guess. Couldn't you just fold a piece of pizza and make a pizza taco?
Well, you could. Well, but it wouldn't be crispy. You know, it would be a little.
And there's a taco pizza already, isn't there?
Yeah, I guess. So why not?
Is the sushi burrito on there? That's like my new thing I want to try.
What?
It's a burrito, but it has all the ingredients of sushi in there. I know there's a bunch of new places popping up with these sushi burritos. It's kind of like a Chipotle concept, but instead it's sushi versus Mexican.
And they're not rolled. It's just the ingredients you'd find in...
No. I think they are rolled in a burrito or rolled in seaweed paper, you know, like a burrito.
I guess you could make a burrito of anything. A shrimp burrito.
Oh, see, I think that would sounds really good.
I guess that's not bad. All right, what about milkshake and cake?
Doesn't Portillo's have that? Yeah.
Portillo's has the chocolate shake cake. But here's the thing where I don't like chunky things in what is supposed to be smooth.
Like, so you don't like a blizzard or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
I don't even like fruit in my yogurt. I could have yogurt on top of my fruit, but it's just a thing. Milk cake shake. I do know that this is very popular with the kids. And when I say kids, my kids, 13 and 16, and I know they've done it before. I'm sure Bill Leff did this as a kid. You dip your French fries from Wendy's in the chocolate frosty.
Oh, now that is... Although I do like a salty and sweet combo, like a chocolate pretzel, so maybe. But I don't know. It just would get like limp, I think. Well, it's a textural thing with me.
All right. And that's what I thought, too. And I was, you know, saying how disgusting it was. And if you've never tried it, I guess don't complain about it, because it actually was much better than I anticipated.
I would give it a whirl.
All right, here's some other things off of the website, Oh Bite It, because I don't know if you're on Pinterest.
I am. I love that.
Pinterest is the most amazing thing in the world. Kevin, you're not on Pinterest, are you?
I like tried it for a second, and I didn't get it, so no. I'm probably logged in somewhere.
Well, I don't think, I mean, it's a girl thing. Let's put it out there. I would imagine, unless there's a guy at home who cooks, because recipes
my brother,
are plenty.
Yeah, I use it for recipes, and my brother is on it all the time, because he loves to cook.
Well, see, that's where you're going to find some good recipes.
Right.
Chili cheese fry burrito.
Yeah, that's well, the California style burrito has fries in it already. It's
that
delicious.
Sounds like the ultimate hangover cure, doesn't it?
Okay. All right, Ruffles crispy treats. I would try that, because that's where you get your salt and sweet.
Oh, like, yeah, that would be good. Instead of using Rice Krispies, use potato chips?
Yes.
Oh, now, see, that would be good.
I don't know. That sounds bizarre to me.
You'd have to dip in a little chocolate, too, though.
Ooh, that's true. Good point on that.
How about we just add a few Ruffles into it? Like, you need the Rice Krispie treats to hold it together and to be something not foreign in your mouth. Add a few chips, maybe, but I don't know about in place of. Pound cake, bacon, and Nutella melt.
Eh.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Nutella is, do you say Nutella or?
Nutella.
Nutella? I don't know.
All right. It tastes just like hazelnuts. And if you're not into hazelnuts, then I'm sorry, you're not into Nutella.
Yeah. Well, it's also like 50% sugar, literally.
I'm okay with the sugar.
Yeah,
I like cookie butter better than I do Nutella, but. Have you had the cookie butter?
Yeah, I've had that.
It's like the same thing, I thought.
Nah.
But the hazelnut flavor is very overpowering. Kind of like salmon. We go back to that.
Salmon Nutella.
Combine the two and they cancel
top.
Out. Yeah.
All right, well, weird food combinations. Do you like them? Are you disgusted by them? If you have some, 312-981-7200. I have a few more here, but pound cake, bacon, and Nutella melt. I'd like chocolate-covered bacon, but I don't know about Nutella-flavored bacon.
You know, but it all goes to that salty sweet thing. You know?
That does work. All right, 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff is on an extended lunch break today, and he will return tomorrow. It's 720 WGN. All right, the combinations of food. Again, salad has become a big thing where you put lots of fruits and nuts in. You know, years ago, you'd never think to put fruits and nuts and mix it with lettuce. It would have to be like a tomato, a cucumber. And now it's anything goes. And a recipe site called Oh Bite It. I just love that. 20 of the greatest food combinations of all time. Some of them are lame, so we're not going to do 20 of them. But how about cheesecake and donuts? It's like a Bismarck stuffed with cheesecake insides. To me, that would be really good.
How could you go wrong with that?
I would do that.
You couldn't go wrong with that.
Rice Krispie treats and donuts. You just take a donut and put like a marshmallowy Rice Krispie treat outer portion on it. I would try that.
Yeah, I would try that. There's never enough sugar in the world for me, so I would try that.
Can I just tell you, we are way too much in advance to talk about Thanksgiving recipes, but I have found something that I think would be absolutely fantastic. Anybody a fan of the green bean casserole?
Me.
No.
Kevin, you don't like it?
Really? No. Oh,
you have to grow up on it, you know?
It's probably a better memory than it is in my mouth.
Right.
I mean, it probably is.
Just the onions on the top. You know, that's like the best part, those crispy onions.
All right. Well, if you like green bean casserole, Kim and I do, check this out. And green bean casserole, Kevin, you know what's in it. It's cream of mushroom soup. It's I like the canned green beans better.
It's just like slimy and it is a weird color. And
typically you take the durky onions and you put them on the top and then you bake it. But listen to this. You take 3 onion rings, crispy fried, and then you take green bean casserole and put it in the hollow part of the 3 rings. So you have green bean casserole.
Oh, so like individual servings?
Yes.
Oh. That's creative.
And you would obviously have to cut it and use a knife so you get a piece of the onion ring and then the green bean casserole in the middle of it. It's like you stack them up, put the green bean casserole in the middle, like it's made a little onion ring bowl for you.
That's cute.
I would like to keep that in mind. What about putting crispy ramen noodles on top of your chicken nuggets?
Oh, raw? I would do that.
Yeah, that's another thing you find in salads these days is raw ramen noodles, which
really?
I am not a fan of.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty hard. I feel like that could hurt.
I put raw ramen noodles in salad, believe it or not, and they're really good, in place of a crouton.
Like an Asian salad, a lot of times they put like
really good.
Mandarin oranges and
almonds in those. Crunch them up.
All right, mac and cheese burritos. It's a burrito
sold.
And in the middle mac and cheese.
Sold.
I know, I would totally do that. Oh, Dave has an idea. Hi, Dave.
Greetings and salutations.
Right back at you.
Well, from the movie UHF, Weird Al Yankovic movie, there was consumed was a taking a Twinkie, opening it up, putting a hot dog in, and then topping it with that spray cheese. And then there was from Cheers a joke with the surf and turf special from Norm's favorite restaurant, the Hungry Heifer, which was a tuna fish sandwich with beef gravy.
Okay, both of those sound disgusting. And are you really going to try something that Weird Al has had?
Yes,
Dave?
I have done it. It is quite good.
Do you have to somehow get the Twinkie cream out of it when you stick the hot dog inside there?
That's part of the appeal. Usually use like the an Oscar Mayer or the that type of the skinnier type dog as opposed to one of those plump the ones
no ballpark like, Franks that plump when you cook them.
Frank. And then the kind that plump up because. And then another thing is when you were going with the fruit in the salad, basically a baby spinach salad, blueberries, and then topped with a blue cheese dressing.
That sounds pretty good. Are you a chef or something, Dave?
I'm just into food. some people eat to live. I live to eat.
Good for you. I think we're all in that foodie category, although I don't like that term foodie.
No, it sounds like footy, and it's weird. But like I say, I'm basically a gourmand, which a gourmet is someone who likes fine cuisine. A gourmand is basically that eats anything that isn't moving.
Well, thank you for sharing. I'm not going to try the Twinkie hot dog thing.
Well, at least it's better than the. From an episode of Dragnet, Bill Gannon's food during the poker game episode, he has on pumpernickel peanut butter on one piece, cream cheese, and between the two slices, a clove of fresh garlic.
Oh, that's terrible. Boy, too bad Bill's not here. You guys could talk about the food from the old-time TV shows, because I bet he knows and remembers each and every one of these episodes you bring up.
Well, in my case, it helps not to have a life.
Oh, Dave, I don't believe you. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. Someone said mustard and peanut butter sandwich is one of my favorites. That's disgusting. 224 has texted, I learned from my dad to put corn, peas, and tuna into mac and cheese.
Oh, yeah, I've done that.
I also add a can of mushrooms. Canned tuna is not meant to be eaten by humans.
Yeah, I agree. It grosses me out.
I'm Catholic, so we grew up with the tuna casserole during Lent all the time, where it basically was cremettes, tuna, peas, and really not that good. And you'd take like a Kraft single and leave it in its square form and melt it on the top of the casserole. That was pre-Pinterest, my friends. All right, Ryan has another thing with peanut butter. What do you mix in your peanut butter with, Ryan?
In high school, a buddy of mine who used to make sandwiches where it was like it was toast with peanut butter and cooked pork sausage links.
I would try that.
Yeah, that doesn't sound that bad to me.
It was really good. I was amazed. I was like, wow.
All right, so the pork sausage, the patties, or the links?
No, the links. The links.
And peanut butter, all melted.
Peanut butter and sometimes some butter, too. Maybe who knows.
I would try that. Thank you so much, Ryan. Peanut butter and jelly and Fritos. In the sandwich? I don't know if I'd try that. Somebody thought the Twinkie hot dog guy was really Bill Leff with a funny voice. Bill already has a funny voice. And wait, there's bacon, kale, and hot jardiniere. That's how you make a salad. That does not sound like a good salad. Ham and cheese melts on cinnamon raisin bagels. Shouldn't really mix ham with a cinnamon raisin bagel. Some really weird peanut butter things. I guess the whole world likes peanut butter, Kathy.
Hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
I grew up on BLTs, and my mom and dad would slap some peanut butter on it, and it was really good. What do you think?
With the lettuce, too, or just the bacon?
Everything.
Really?
Yep. That's good. I think it was good because the bacon with the peanut butter tasted really good. You should try it, Wendy.
I might give it a try, and I've really decided that anything with bacon works. Why is that?
It just tastes good.
I agree. Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate it. Some weird food combinations, whatever floats your boat, but I have been known to have a radish sandwich, which is pretty boring when you think about it. It's just really soft white bread with sliced radishes and a little salt and pepper. Whatever floats your boat. 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break, and then it's news time with Steve Bertrand. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill's off for the rest of the afternoon, but it's still WGN 720. I don't mean to put our next guest on the spot, Alex Robluski in the studio, a photojournalist based in Chicago. He's a senior journalism student at Columbia College right here. Do you know what song that is? It's a little Rod Stewart, Every Picture Tells a Story, don't it? Does that mean something to you?
I don't know if I heard that one, but I'll have to check it out after this for sure.
You haven't heard? Well, you're young. I'm an old lady who likes to rock with Rod Stewart, who, I got to be honest with you, doesn't rock. He sounds like he's a woman singing now.
He's not a bad guy, though.
He's not a bad guy. All right, what captured our attention here is you have been named Student Still Photographer of the Year, and this is issued by the White House News Photographers Association. So your pictures that you have taken all over the world, you got yourself an award from the White House. That's pretty exciting.
Much thanks. Thank you. Very, very exciting moment. And, you know, it's a real honor.
All right. Now, how many people are in this News Photographers Association, this White House News Photographers Association? These are like all people like that from AP and everywhere else?
Sure. AP, New York Times, you know, Reuters. Most of the folks in the organization are a press in D.C. covering the White House.
And you're just some dude from Wisconsin who now all of a sudden is taking these really amazing pictures. For instance, you documented ISIS goings-on in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that, because you can go to his website, people. It's Alex Robluski, the traditional spelling of Robluski. Alex Robluski, photo.verb.com.
Correct.
VIRB.com. And we'll put a link up on our Facebook page as well, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. But some of these photos that you have taken while in Iraq, one, in for instance, that I'm going to bring up, and again, listeners, you can look at it. There are soldiers shooting. There are sandbags. Were these guys hidden? What was going on in this particular picture?
Sure. That was actually at Camp Spiker in Tikrit on the front line with ISIS, and I was with the group called the Hashd-e-Shaabi. They are a paramilitia underneath the Baghdad government in Iraq. So.
And they were fighting ISIS members.
Correct. Yep, correct.
And what the hell are you doing there?
Well, I've...
Like, this is a real fight going on.
It might sound strange, but I've wanted to go to Iraq for quite some time with the war. Looking at the media and seeing, you know, I've never experienced anything like that. So, like, you know, I wanted to do it myself. And most of us haven't,
most of us never will.
Sure.
And unless we're in the service, we won't think about it. But that's, you're a photojournalist. You want to capture the pictures. I was telling you off the air, as I'm looking through all your individual pictures, they really bring an emotion out in me, which is exactly what you're going for when you take these photos.
Absolutely.
So when did you go to Iraq and how long were you there?
I was there for a month this time last year, actually.
Just for a month, which is long enough for most people.
Sure, yeah. And I was there actually originally studying in Istanbul, Turkey, studying abroad. And I had an opportunity to embed with the Hashdashabi, the militia guys. And it was an interesting experience because a lot of journalists and a lot of the coverage you see, they're embedded with American soldiers. So it was a very different, you know, I got a very different experience, I think, than, you know, I never embedded with the Marines or the Army, the Americans, but I think,
with
you
the
know,
Iraqis.
I got to see, I got to see more of the culture and got to see more of, I think, Iraq than what some folks would have embedded in. I mean, it's a very, very different situation now.
Oh, my God.
But it was, a unique experience, I think, as a journalist to embed with these. With the Iraqis themselves.
Okay, were there other journalists?
Sure, yeah. I was actually with some great reporters. Luckily, you know, like I said, I had never done that before. So a way that I was comfortable doing so, going to some of these places, was being with experienced reporters like Aaron Banko from the International Business Times or Jake Simkin, Australian photojournalist based out of Turkey, who's been covering Syria lately.
Oh, my God.
And then John Moore from Getty Images, who is
Getty Images, you see,
Pulitzer Prize-winning
everything.
Photojournalist. So being with those, with professionals who have been in those situations before made me more comfortable.
As comfortable as you could be
exactly,
in that situation.
Absolutely.
What about the language barrier?
I was lucky to be with a journalist who spoke Arabic, Aaron Banko from the International Business Times. And I worked with her a lot, And then when she wasn't there, I was with John Moore, who had a fixer/translator, somebody who, an Iraqi, who helps us, you know, move around. And
were they cool to you? I mean, there's a war going on right as you're there, but they want it documented.
Sure, exactly. That's exactly right. And everybody was, for the most part, pretty friendly because, like you said, they want that documentation. So traditionally, embedding with the foreign military, you know, it doesn't happen a lot. So when they were about to take the city of Tikrit from ISIS, it was one of the major first advances against ISIS, and they wanted journalists to be there. So they opened up this, word of mouth. I was able to meet up with somebody who was organizing the trip and started looking at logistics and, you know, planning the trip out
And going through with it is what freaks me out, because here's the thing. You think about it, and you have you're a pretty important guy. People taking pictures, people documenting this thing going on. What if somebody kidnaps you? Don't they want you to maybe spin it their way? Did you have fear? Were you in any imminent danger?
Sure. There was one situation where there was a truck of guys that were injured, and we can't photograph them because that would reflect badly to a degree on, you know, them, making them look like they're losing.
So there are rules you have to adhere to.
There were times where we get stopped at a checkpoint and took some pictures of some Iraqi security forces, and then they stopped the car and it was like, delete the pictures. And so there's definitely situations where it's hard to operate. I mean, taking pictures, one thing during in a war zone is, you know, and then being an American and a Western journalist on top of it, with, you know, given the history of Iraq and our presence there, I mean, it just made it a little bit more complicated.
I don't see what you, as a young man, could have left on your bucket list, because being a photojournalist, this would be somewhere you'd want to go in a war zone and take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
A little closer to home, there is a picture that was taken of Ferguson, Missouri. It is, I can't even explain the first picture that comes up. Again, we're talking to Alex Roblewski, a photojournalist based right here in Chicago. You're currently a senior journalism student at Columbia College, a focus on reporting and writing. You can see these unbelievable pictures, Alex Roblewski Photo www.virb.com. Explain a little something about the Ferguson, Missouri photo. That is the first one, I believe, as riots are happening all mm-hmm. around.
Sure. The police had initially started launching tear gas to break up the demonstrators. In this one lone protester, with the hands on their head, a very symbolic moment of the situation that was happening in Ferguson, and stood in the street, and I was able to make that picture. Luckily, I had a gas mask. It definitely came in handy. So without that, I wouldn't have been able to make that image. And
so you were, all the media people are given the supplies that the police had. So you had gas masks. Did you have a shield? Did you have anything?
No. As a freelancer, I kind of got to supply that yourself. So luckily, the photojournalism community in Chicago, and in general, people really take care of each other. And a friend of mine loaned me one of his extra gas masks.
Boy, that's a good friend who mm-hmm. has a gas mask to begin with and who will lend it to you.
Sure.
There's a photo, a woman who was hit by tear gas in Ferguson, Missouri. Someone has dumped some water in mm-hmm. her eyes to help mm-hmm. clear it out. Now, when you... These are just unbelievably moving photographs, and I know it's difficult to talk about them on the radio, so do feel free to visit the website, alexroblewskiphoto.vrb.com. Do you have to get permission once this was taken, and just like in an episode of Cops or somewhere mm-hmm. else, you have to get permission to use these subjects in your photos that are on display, correct?
No, since we're in public, and you're in public property, you're able to make pictures when you're in public.
So. It's just journalism. You're capturing what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And this, in most situations, you'd get somebody's name and age and where they're from, but this is a really chaotic, intense situation with tear gas, and just it was pretty chaotic, it's hard to get people's names in those situations.
Well, yes, that would make sense. It's not like, hey, by the way,
yeah, absolutely, yeah,
what's your name,
mm-hmm.
your email. It is mm-hmm. a pretty tense situation. All right, so you being a photojournalist, when you're looking at this stuff going on, it's your job to take a picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing your job, you're taking a picture. Is it emotionally draining when you realize that this photo you're taking is really happening, like in the war in Iraq, mm-hmm. in the Ferguson, Missouri riots?
Mm-hmm.
It's really going on. I mean, do you have to like convince yourself, like, wow, this is real?
It's a great question. During some of the more chaotic situations, like in Iraq or elsewhere, it's hard to stop and... Like, you're trying to get your job done, right? And you don't want your emotions to get in the way. So you're kind of in work mode, like, get stuff done mode. And so you're not so much soaking in the moment. And in some situations, you're missing it because you're trying to compose this image and capture the right moment. So you're kind of missing it in a way. But it does later, the evening later or the day later. Like
it does
sink in. You process it. But at the same time, like, when that's happening... Like, you're trying to get the job done, so you're not so much thinking about it from a personal, emotional, human standpoint.
I guess that's good, because you'd miss the shot.
Exactly.
You'd be sitting there going, oh my God, I can't believe this is going on.
And I can only speak from my own personal experiences, but for the most part, in those chaotic situations, you're trying to make the picture, and then later, as a human being, it'll emotionally, you'll feel, definitely.
Absolutely.
Definitely feel it, so...
What are your thoughts? Because a lot of times the media, and especially people who are filming or taking pictures, get criticized. Why are you taking a photo? Why are you not helping?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Sure.
Is that something that goes through your head?
Yeah, I think the refugee crisis has made that question. That's been a big question. And somebody I really look up to, James Notway, says that when he's the only person there to help, he helps. And otherwise, he's there to take a picture and show the world what's happening. And, that's a great question. What's happening in Iraq before the Paris attacks, it wasn't... And now ISIS is, all in every headline. It's all over the place.
I know.
And going to Iraq and taking those photos is, something I wanted to do to not just... It's a personal experience myself, but also to show what's happening at the war. Just because Americans are gone doesn't mean the war's over.
No, and you're our eyes.
As we all know
now,
ISIS is a very real threat. So,
all right, we're talking with Alex Roblewski. It's just really fascinating to me. You can check out his website at alexroblewskiphoto.vrb.com. What's VIRB?
It's also otherwise just alexroblewskiphoto.com as well.
Okay.
They both lead to the same site.
All right, and here's why we're having you on, because you've won an award by the White House News Photographers Association, which is pretty cool. You're only you're still in college, Columbia College, and you will be graduating this year?
In May, God willing.
All right, so you're going to need a job here as well. So 312-981-7200. You have photographed some amazing things overseas in Iraq, in Ferguson, Missouri, and a little closer to home. I want to talk about the gun violence in Chicago and what you've taken photos of next. It's Alex Roblewski. It's the Bill and Wendy Show. It's 720 WGN. It's WGN, and we are talking about some pretty amazing photography that's going on. A guy who, you're originally from Wisconsin,
correct.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Alex Roblewski, he is now a senior journalism student at Columbia College, and he has been named Student Still Photographer of the Year by the White House News Photographers Association. I hope there's a big award coming your way, and maybe a visit to the White House. We'll keep our fingers crossed. So you came from Wisconsin. You're now in the Rogers Park area.
Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been here in Chicago?
I moved here in January 2013. So.
Okay, so you're relatively fresh.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of changes have happened in the city. A lot of violence has gone on in the city. And if you go to Alex's website, which is alexroblewskiphoto.com,
mm-hmm.
That'll work.
Correct.
There are some pictures covering all the work he has done, including ISIS in Iraq as he was embedded with some Iraqi troops, Ferguson, Missouri, and then gun violence in Chicago. And there is a photograph, your first picture that comes up if you click on the gun violence in Chicago, and it looks like a frightened person looking through blinds in the window. Is that how you describe it? Can you tell us the story behind this?
Sure. That's somebody peeking out at a crime scene on that same block. And part of the, I guess, challenge to keep the, I think some folks in Chicago are, the gun violence story isn't new to them, so it's hard to make, as a photographer shooting a lot of crime scenes, making them look unique or interesting or trying to get a fresh perspective was the main challenge of getting people to be interested in the story. And as you know, this year it's been unbelievable
and unacceptable. But the picture of someone peeking through the blinds, like the Venetian blinds. You feel fear. You feel what this person is fearing, and it's trying to stay alive. There's a next screen where there it's raining, and there is a white sheet over a body. That is that person's no longer alive. Correct.
Correct. He passed away there. His name was Michael Patton, and it was outside of another photographer's home, Vincent David Johnson, who held his hand before he passed away.
And that's when, as you were talking about another photographer, I don't know if it was this one, who said if he's the only one there, he will help. Otherwise, he will take a photo of something.
Different photographer,
okay.
But still.
I wasn't sure.
Yep. He's actually, Vincent is local, based here locally in Chicago, Vincent David Johnson.
All right. Now, you have been hard at work, and I'm pretty excited for you to graduate from Columbia College, because this is most impressive to put together in a portfolio to look for a job.
Thanks.
And your parents, I wanted to bring that up. Your mother recently lost her battle with breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned something off the air. Tomorrow will be the year.
It'll be a year,
tomorrow.
To the day tomorrow, correct.
I'm so sorry about that. And she was always supportive of your photography.
Yeah, she, I don't know how many parents would be too crazy about their kid wanting to go to school to be a professional photographer, but she was always supportive, bought me my first camera, co-signed all my student loans, and just never a moment with a shadow of a doubt of whether or not I'd be successful. She was always very, very confident and very proud and was as loving as a mom could be. And I would not be where I'm at today without my mom. So.
And she would be very proud of you. Just I'm stunned by these photos that you can find at alexroblewskiphoto.com. And my question to you off the air, and I'm going to bring it on the air, your mom had a terrible battle with breast cancer, mm-hmm. and did half of you want to document what she was going through as a photographer, or was that off limits because it was too close to home?
That's a good question. I never put any serious consideration into documenting it, I guess. Honestly, I never put any thought into actually her path of, you know, what it would be like after she died. I never just, you know, thought about that as a son, I guess. It's something you don't want to think about.
And I can't imagine it.
I just kind of, I guess I blocked that out and, you know, making, as far as taking pictures or telling her story about her battle with cancer, that either, I guess I never really put, really truly considered that. But, yeah, this is something, you know.
It's too
close
to home.
That's something you don't want to think about, I guess.
Yeah, and you probably didn't ever think she'd lose her battle.
Yeah, we really didn't. So.
All right, well, I am so impressed with what I see. What is your plans next? Now, again, you're going to get this award, the Student Still Photographer of the Year Award by the White House News Photographers Association. You're currently, till May anyway, a journalism student at Columbia College. Your focus is on reporting and writing. What is your goal? When you graduate, what do you want to do?
Good question.
Because seriously, you've hit the bucket list on some of these mm-hmm. things. Do you want to see what I would do and not go to these terrible war zones? I'd want to shoot like Tahiti, you know, for the Travel Agency Bureau or something like that. Oh, look at the beaches. But this is a work of art. Your website That's is a nice. Work of art. But what do you want to do with this?
It's a good question. I kind of want to keep my options open. I don't want to kind of pigeonhole and say I'm going to do this or just that. Just kind of want to keep my options open. I'll be interning at the New York Times this summer, and then
that's pretty cool.
I'm super excited. You know, there's no place else I'd rather be, and I'll be a photo intern, so just be out shooting full time after it's been a while with school. So I'm excited to finish school and just be shooting full time. You know, the campaign will be going on. We'll see what happens with that.
So. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. I am moved by your photographs. And again, it's tough to display those while you're on the radio, mm-hmm. but you can go to his website. It's Alex Roblewski, Alex Roblewski photo.com. Mm-hmm. And can people get in touch with you there in case maybe they have a job for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Phone and email are there as well.
So. Congratulations. The White House News Photographers Association has named you Student Still Photographer of the Year. And is there one particular photo that got you this award or the whole portfolio of
it's
photos?
Portfolio. Correct.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Much thanks, Wendy.
We will see you, I'm sure, the little credits in all the big news publications someday. We'll just see photo by Alex Roblewski.
Sounds good to me.
Congratulations. Thanks. And again, the website is alexroblewskiphoto.com. We'll take a quick break, and we're back with News 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here. I have no voice, and I have no Bill. Bill left. You know, I can honestly say Bill left today. He had to leave early. He had some things to take care of. I've got Steve Bertrand here, and Steve, I have to ask you a question. Do you remember the very first record album you ever bought?
I'm busy. I'm sorry. No, it might have been from the Partridge Family, so I'm going to block that out.
I see it. Why you said you were busy. I had the Partridge Family album.
What did I have? I remember the 45s, Love the One You're With. Remember that?
Yeah.
Can't have the, things like that I had.
Well, we're going to talk to Val Camaletti right now. She has owned and operated Val's Hala Record Store in Oak Park since when was this, 1972, Val?
1972, it's been mine, yes. I was there for 5 years before that, though.
As an employee?
As an employee of the small chain that I ran called NMC Discount Records. That was from 67 till 72, but it's been Val's Hala since 72, so we're going into 44 years in July.
All right. I see you every year on Record Store Day.
You sure do.
And this started, I'm embarrassed to say, you know, I'm in my 50s, yet my 16-year-old son.
You're a child.
I, well.
You're a child.
My child was the one who said, Mom, can we go to a record store day? And I said, why do you want records? And Val, I swear to God, we cannot get out of there without spending way more than anticipated.
I know. You make my day. It's wonderful.
All right. Now tell us about record store day. It's been happening since how long?
It's been, I think we just figured out that it's 6 years. This is, I think, the sixth year, but it has just multiplied and grown into just utter, total chaos, and I just love it. It's memorable because it reminds me of days when record stores were like this every weekend and every holiday. And then there was that whole period of about 20 years where, we felt like we were alone on some desert island somewhere, and Record Store Day has just brought back all of the fun that what it is to be a record store and to be in a record store on that day. It's just a ball.
And what's exciting is there are a lot of special issues that come out in honor of Record Store Day.
Absolutely, from
bands like, I know last year my son Michael got something from the Zombies that was an exclusive to Record Store Day.
That's exactly right. And a matter of fact, that is the focus. It isn't what's supposed to be the focus. The focus is supposed to be that people like you come just to wish us well and to shop in their record store and to visit their favorite independent record store. But the reality is that the special edition stuff, the limited edition stuff that's put out for that day, is really the crazy draw. I mean, and there's one record that is especially fun. Months and months and months ago, the independent stores that participated were sent a list of Sun recordings from their vaults, the old recordings of rockabilly and early rock. And the stores were asked to vote on titles from this big long list that they would like to see on a compilation. And based on those votes, Sun Records puts out a limited edition, one day only, compilation made up of those old songs. And that's the kind of thing. It's not what everybody does, but it's the kind of thing. It's a special, sometimes it's just putting out or reissuing something that in colored vinyl or in a box set form. Sometimes it's putting out titles and things that have never been issued before. So it's a combination of things, but it's somehow unusual. Maybe 45s of stuff that has never been available. So it's all that kind of stuff. And the record companies have gotten really creative about it, and they have jumped all over the bandwagon. The negative side of that can be that these really are limited. And so no matter what we order,
while supplies
last,
we're
not likely to get everything.
Yep. And what time do you open on Saturday for Record Store Day? Because really, come early or you're going to miss some of the great stuff.
Yeah, well, we open at 9, our normal opening time is 11, so we open 2 hours early. We do have coffee and donuts for those people who've been standing. Last year, there were people standing out there at 4 a.m. We were not among them. We got there at 8, and the line was all the way to the next corner. So, and we found out that 4 a.m. was when it started. But we open at 9. We're open till 7. The music this year starts at about 10. We'll have music on our stage from 10 until 5. We this year have been lucky enough to get donated some wonderful stuff for our raffles. We have little boxes where we raffle off tickets to events and tickets to concerts and things that have been donated, and you can actually put your name in for whatever you'd like to win. There's no cost, and you don't have to buy anything to enter and all that. And then we'll have a store-wide sale going on anyway, on top of all the limited edition stuff. So it's a big day. We have a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun just to attend to. We're talking to Val Camaletti, who is running Val's Hala Record Store. She's operated it since 1972. And Saturday is Record Store Day. If you've never partaken in the festivities, you should go to Val's Hala. It's a fun time, lots of live music. My son, Michael...
Will include Michael, I hope.
Well, yes, I put a little something up on Facebook, and Val, you mentioned you could maybe sneak him in for a song or two. He totally wants to.
I would love to do that.
But thank you so much. I appreciate that. But I just want to say, last year, Michael, 16-year-old kid, he's there, and we were there so long that at one point I just said, I'm going to go to Divine and Consign, this thrift shop. I'll pick you up later. And he calls me. He goes, I think they're closing, Mom. And Val's giving me a look like, do I have to stay here overnight? It catches you. You go through all the bins. You have special closeouts. You have new albums. You have old albums.
Yeah.
And it is.
It's a very special feeling. It has never been duplicated with any other format, what happens with LPs. And for me, the joy is that people Michael's age are buying music with the same kind of passion that I have been selling, you know, music to people who would be old enough to be his grandfather for that long. And that kind of passion never happened with CDs, and it certainly doesn't happen with downloading your music, because records are to be shared, and the stories that I love to tell are of the, you know, the 18-year-olds 40 years ago who, if you asked them what they were doing Friday night, they were saying, well, we're going to listen to the new Zeppelin album. And
right.
Four guys would get together and be in the basement, you know, and one guy would have enough money to buy the album, and then they would argue with Led Zeppelin that they should have put this song on side two instead of side one. That's the kind of involvement that passionate music listeners had with vinyl and have again. And the joy to me is that they're 16 years old and 17 years old, you know. And now their parents are saying, well, yeah, it was sort of fun to shop through the bins and buy vinyl and listen to it and turn it over and hear what that person was trying to say. And so they're kind of coming back to it too, you know. It doesn't compete with the amount of downloading, but you know.
Yeah, but that's
wonderful.
It is wonderful. And what is wonderful is when you have to ask your teenage son if you could borrow their turntable.
Yes, that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. Well, that's the way it started. You know, it was 14, 15, and 16-year-olds that made the difference in the world of music when I was 14, 15, and 16 with my press board record player. And then when I was at Capitol, it was the Beatles who created that, and it was 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds, and it's 14 and 15 and 16-year-olds now. So they lead the way when it comes to music, and they always have, and they always will. But right now they're leading it toward vinyl, which is making me very happy.
Well, it's so fun to go in there and look around, and I'll never forget getting my Led Zeppelin, speaking of which, you get the in through the outdoor, and it comes in a paper cover.
Paper bag.
And how many different album covers were there on that where you didn't know which one you'd get?
Oh, I don't know. They had a bunch. I think there was four or five even at the time. Yeah.
And it was so gimmicky, but yet we all fell for it. And I still fall for a brightly colored vinyl disc instead of black.
Oh, yeah. And picture discs. I mean,
yeah.
you can buy Thriller now as a picture disc.
That's,
you know,
pretty
so the
cool.
38 million copies that were black that they sold weren't enough. Now you could buy the picture disc.
Yeah, but see, that one is not one you're going to play because you don't want to ruin the picture. You want to just, you know, encase that in glass and hang it.
Yeah, you can play those. They won't ruin them.
Really?
You know, they're meant to be played. And when they're going around on the turntable, they're really cool. I don't know how many people remember the Dave Mason album, but that was in marble that came out with a marble vinyl. And that was in a lot of people's collections. And that was a little bit later, but that, you know, the first time that happened, people were like, wah, you know. So it's very cool.
It is really cool. Of course, Cheap Trick, Steve Miller, Chicago, and Deep Purple being inducted, or they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland.
You bet.
And I will be watching that on April 30th on HBO. Steve Miller really upset about the cost of the tickets. He only got two tickets. And if he wanted another one to bring, like, his band members, it was $10,000 a ticket.
Well, that's a bit much. My band members would have to stay home and watch me on TV. That's
yeah, sure. And they did. Well, we are not going to stay home on Saturday. We will be out there sometime. I hope Terry Hummert's there from WXRT.
She won't be there this year. You know, Terry's recovering from, has been through a battle with surgery, and she has several shows that weekend, so she won't be there. But I'm hoping that some of the other fellow members will be from that other radio station will be there. So we're going to be covered with radio people. So you can all be famous together.
Awesome. I'll be there sometime between, I don't know, the kids will sleep in probably between 11 and 2.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Val.
I can't wait to see you. Okay. Take care, Wendy. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Her name is Val Camaletti. She has operated Val's Hollow Record Store in Oak Park since it opened in 1972. And I can't tell you how much fun going to Record Store Day is. It's coming up this Saturday. You can check, I think there's probably a website like recordstoreday.com even, because there are various other places that might be closer to you than Val's Hollow. But if you're in the Oak Park area, 239 Harrison Street, Oak Park, Illinois, and you can go to valshollarecords.com. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff is off for the rest of the day. He will return tomorrow, and we'll return in a second, 720 WGN. And after waiting more than 20 years, the band Chicago is finally getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Dean Richards has the inside story, and that's going to happen tonight on WGN TV News at 9. You can go to recordstoreday.com, and there's a whole list of participating stores if you're in and around the Oak Park Avenue. In the Oak Park area, rather. You can stop by Val's Hollow Record Store. Val Camaletti opened it in 1972, and she is not looking back. You can also check out her bathroom, which usually I don't tell people to go to a place to check out their bathroom, but it is a complete throne, and they pay homage to Elvis Presley. So, seems fitting. Recordstoreday.com to see who is participating in your area. And definitely some special things. Bob Mould is putting something out for Record Store Day. And I'm trying to think of the first album I ever bought. I asked Steve Bertrand, and I don't believe that it was really the Partridge Family. That was your first album. I will wait for my answer. Whatever, Bertrand. I think my very first album might have been Van Halen 1, which I...
Van Halen, that's not bad.
Yours really wasn't the Partridge Family.
I might have been a really young kid. But I did have the first Van Halen album, early Tom Petty as well.
Yeah, I never did 8-tracks. I never had an 8-track. I went and I had 45s. You know what's weird is I'm going back in time. I have 78s because I have a Victrola that works. And it's really fun going to garage sales and thrift stores to find 78 records. And you crank it up, and you can't crank too hard, or you're going to break the whole mechanism in it. And then you play 78 records. And I really felt like an old person when I'm showing my kids, oh, look, this was how records were. They were very easily breakable, and you put them on. And I said, oh, do you want to see the volume, how you make it louder? And they seemed confused. And then you just open the doors underneath where you can slide record albums. And when you open the doors, it makes it a little louder.
I remember, you go even to the grocery store or the shopper's fair, and, they would just have a couple of bins. So while your mom was shopping, that's what I would do, go through the records. I had an Elvis album I actually bought, like a compilation of his movie music or something.
The movie music. Yeah. Well, there was a store called Corvettes. I don't know if you had one.
Sure, yeah.
In Manteno?
No, but there was one in maybe Matson or somewhere right along there.
Yeah, and I remember my mom used to go shopping, and that's for sure where I got almost all of my albums. Because, I don't know, it was a weird thing. You had your people in the 60s and 70s that made it a point to go to a record store, and then when we were growing up, records were still around, but you went where your mom could take you. It wasn't like a special place. Hey, we're going to go to the record store today. But me, on the other hand, I am going to the record store on Saturday because it's National Record Store Day. And Valhalla Record Store in Oak Park on Harrison. You can also go to recordstoreday.com and find out all the participating stores and all the news and all the new releases, including, like I said, Bob Mould, Patch the Sky. There's a bunch of bands that are reissuing all their stuff on vinyl, which is pretty wild. 312-981-7200. Bill Leff is off for the rest of the day. He'll return tomorrow. I'm Wendy Snyder, and at 720 WGN. A little zeppage. All right, Record Store Day. We were talking about it. I think, I really do think Van Halen 1 was my first album.
Sorry about that.
Bertrand, you know, when Bill leaves and I need more of you, I don't get more of you.
No, I have another appointment, but I was just telling Kevin June he'll be here in a second. I didn't realize my microphone was open, but I still, whether it is or not, I have to go.
Whatever.
But I just got word that Steve has to go.
All right. Steve, wish you could stay, but I hear you have to go.
What did she say?
Nothing. Goodbye. Her. God, he's just ruining everything. He really is. He gets pleasure in that, too. So Van Halen 1, I think, was my first one. And then I skipped 8 tracks altogether. And cassettes, I have to say, Joe Walsh, But Seriously, Folks, was my first cassette I ever bought. And record stores were like a big event. I liked going there. Dave, what about your record store memories?
Good afternoon, Wendy.
Greetings.
My first record I ever bought was in Woolworth in Fox Lake, Illinois. And they still had the plywood racks where you could go A to B, B to C. First one was Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Awesome. Their debut record?
Yes. And then what they had there was when they had the three of them sitting at old abandoned house, they weren't sitting in order. So they came back the next day, and the house was torn down. So they couldn't reshoot that photograph on the front of the album.
Where'd you hear that story, may I ask, Dave?
It is true.
It is.
From Ahmet Ertegun, who was their producer, okay? And they tried to get back, and on the back of that album, it was all like saran wrap. It wasn't shrink wrap, okay? The back of that album, the man standing at the back door was Neil Young.
How weird is that?
Exactly.
All right, well, I didn't know that, but I knew the house and I knew the arrangement of that couch. And it's my understanding, Henry Diltz was this amazing photographer who took a bunch of pictures of all the rock and rollers. And he was there, and they pulled up that couch. Somebody was throwing it out, and that's Joni Mitchell's house because I think they all were hanging out with Joni, but definitely Graham Nash was dating Joni Mitchell.
But actually, at that point, Wendy, was Graham Nash was not dating Joni Mitchell at that point. It was not until Deja Vu, the second album, okay? They only made 2 albums, okay? And it all started with Mama Cass in her living room, not Joni Mitchell's.
Okay, see, you're right, and that's where they hooked up. If Henry Diltz is ever through town again, you've got to go see his slide presentation of all these album covers. It's so cool.
And thank God he's still with us. He shot so many artists, from country to rock to everybody.
To David Cassidy.
No doubt. No doubt.
All right, thank you, Dave. Happy Record Store Day. It's Karen Bark on the line. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Wendy. How are you doing?
We're good. I mentioned Corvettes, and I know there was one. I went to the one in North Riverside. And what did Corvette stand for?
Okay, well, every one of my launchmen from the North Shore knows this. It was EJ Corvettes,
right.
Which stood for 8 Jewish Korean War Veterans.
Really?
Yeah, because Eugene Furkoff, who started it with his friends, they were all Korean War vets.
I had no idea.
You didn't, but if you grew up in Skokie, you would have.
Is this in your play?
It actually isn't. You know, it's just like, you know how things go off in your head? Like
right.
You know what I mean? You said Corvettes. I'm like, oh, I bet she doesn't know about EJ, 8 Jewish Korean War veterans. But everybody Jewish from the North Shore knows.
I also wanted to say my first 45, it just made me remember it too, from Woolworths, was Woolly Bully. You know who did that song?
Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs.
Yep, and the other side, the flip side of it, the B side.
Oh, you know what? I had that too, and I can't think of something chic. No. What was it?
Ahab the Arab.
Oh, that's right. That's really politically correct.
Very. And I'm going to beat you to it, you know, when you usually say, Karen, what are you promoting?
Yes.
Okay, well, you know, we can't get away without that. May 5th at the Skokie Theater, my Mother's Day show, The Jewish Mother's Guide to Everything.
Okay, and how do we get tickets if we want to go see it on Mother's Day?
Well, it's not on Mother's Day. It's the Thursday before.
All right.
So you can still do your brunch. It's at the Skokie Theater, which is in Skokie on Lincoln Avenue. I'm not sure the phone number, and they have a website. And I wasn't planning on doing this. I was driving.
No, that's okay. We'll get that information, Karen. The Skokie Theater, and when is it again?
The evening of May 5th. It's a Thursday night. So you can still do whatever Mother's Day thing you did, but you can bring your mother, you can bring your wife, someone can bring their mother, bring your daughter. It's a lot of fun, very fun.
And I believe Kevin has a phone number for you, Karen.
Just off the top of my head, it's 847-677-7761.
That's right. See, he's so great. He's the best.
He is.
So lucky.
All right.
Thank you so much,
Karen.
Thanks so much. Enjoy the beautiful day.
Yeah, you as well. It is pretty nice out there. And I get some credit on the back of Woolly Bully. I said something about a sheik because, you know, Ahab the Arab, which is not politically correct, but that was the name of the song, you know, maybe a sheik and some has something to do with it. I'm not quite sure. John is on the line with us. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi. Well, my first album was Meet the Beatles. They all had black turtlenecks on. It was kind of a cool cover. And it was their first album.
I remember that album cover. But so what year was it that you bought your first record?
Yeah, I'm thinking 64. I'm not sure, but I think it was 64. Could have been 63. I don't know when that first came out.
Well, that's pretty cool, and you remember that. I see. That's what I love about Record Store Day. You go there and you hold these albums in your hand, you look at them, you're proud of them. You never did that with a CD case,
right? Yeah. Unfortunately, I had all my albums were thrown out. They probably would be worth something today, but well.
Sorry about that. Have a good one, John. Thank you so much for calling. Teresa is on the line. We're talking about our first records. Van Halen 1 was mine. Teresa, what was yours?
Mine was a gift from a neighbor who went to the opening of Disneyland in 1955. It was really a cardboard album with pictures of Cinderella and Snow White, and the songs were on a cellophane, grooved cellophane on top of the record. So I looked at that a lot because of the pictures.
That's pretty sweet, but you remember it, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I know. It touches just the sentimental nerve when you talk about records. Thank you so much, Teresa. I appreciate it. We're going to talk about Record Store Day because Kevin and I were looking at the list of all the cool new releases. So we'll come back, and I have a few more texts and phone calls. 312-981-7200. I know they say you always remember your first, but you really do always remember your first album. Trust me on that one. It's Bill and Wendy. No Bill. It's 720 WGN. When Bill comes back, we have to do that, name that tune, because Ohio, I mean, I swear, from being a rock jock all these years ago, you queued up records all the time, so you always knew the beginning of a song, and I could beat anyone and name that tune. I really can. We're talking about National Record Store Day, which is happening Saturday. I'm going to head over to Valhalla Record Store in Oak Park. My son Michael is going to do a couple of acoustic songs because he can't help but travel with a guitar. And if you want him to go to your house, he'll play something for you there, too. We were talking about Corvettes and not the cars, but the store. And Susan, you bought your first album at Corvettes as well?
I did. I was a freshman in high school, and it was Meet the Beatles. And I even remember the price. It was $2.88. I left the Saran on for a long time, and that was the price tag. And I think we shot there because they had a great price for albums back then. And all my early Beatle albums were purchased there.
They did have a very good price, and I'll be honest with you, the first album I probably listened to was my sister's The White Album by the Beatles, and she actually let me hang the four pictures of George, Paul, John, and Ringo on my wall, although we did share a bedroom, so maybe that's why she let me do it.
Well, I could tell I'm a little bit older than you are, so that sounds about right.
But you always remember it. It's something that it's really fun to go look through albums. Even at Goodwill, when I go there, I have to look through the albums, and you find yourself smiling, going, "Oh yeah, I remember that one."
Yeah. Oh yes, it was an event at the time. Going to Corvettes to buy an album, and you saved up for it, and you waited till you heard about it on the radio that they were coming out with the new album. So. It was fun.
That's pretty cool. Thank you so much for sharing that, Susan. A couple of texts as well. Supertramp Breakfast in America. I definitely had that on vinyl. And Donny Osmond's Puppy Love, a 45 version of Puppy Love. I might have had that when I wrote my love letter to Donny Osmond, but I'm not admitting that on the air. No problem. Joe, what was the first album you ever bought?
Cheech and Chong, Big Bamboo.
Now, was Cheech and Chong traditionally a fold-out album so you could clean your weed with it?
No, you got to understand, I was probably seven. That's how I got my sex education and my swearing education.
You were taught well by the professionals.
Yeah, they were hilarious. My first albums were all comedians, but I bet you had Peter Frampton live, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So the 70s, there were some great albums in the 70s.
That was Peter Frampton Comes Alive, right? That was the actual title of it?
Yeah, and I think for the longest time that might even still be the largest selling live record ever.
It might be, but REO Speedwagon, You Get What You Play For, was also a great double live album as well.
Yeah. Well, great topic, a lot of fun to talk about. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Joe. Wow, this is a good one. Hi, David. How are you today?
Great. I remember my first album was Beatles, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and Dave Brubeck's Take Five. I mainly was in the 45s and the singles, but I can't remember the B-sides, though, so it's killing me.
Have you watched the movie Diner? Because there's just the best rap about knowing the B-sides.
No, I'll have to check it out. Most of my albums were comedy albums like Bill Cosby or Al Hurt and Tijuana Brass and real obscure stuff, which you can still find at Goodwill's today. So like you said, that's an awesome find to be thumbing through that and going down memory lane. So we're going to have to do some of that this Saturday for sure.
Well, excellent. It's record store day, so take advantage of it. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it, David. Somebody says the EJ Corvette story is false, according to Snopes. So Karen Bark has led us down the wrong path. My first record was Sesame Street when I was six. Wow. I did not get a record when I was six. Cereal Box Records, I miss those. That is a text from Bill Leff. He has actually figured out how to text. I don't understand that. First 45, Sweet Ballroom Blitz from 1975 or 1976. I will mention, if you go to recordstoreday.com, all the special releases that are coming out this year in honor of Record Store Day, which is Saturday. There's a David Bowie picture disc that is available, and you might want to jump on that. And a young David Bowie, I Dig Everything, the Pie singles from 1966, a 12-inch vinyl. Seriously, go to recordstoreday.com. I found our producer, Kevin, looking through the list of all the things that are coming out. Cheap Trick, a 10-inch vinyl record. There's an Anthrax record for all of you Anthrax lovers. Disturbed, The Sound of Silence, a picture disc, just what you want, that lovely picture, but it is a great sound, The Sound of Silence. So go to recordstoreday.com, special releases all coming out. It's great, big fun, and it's all happening right here, 720 WGN.